is that guy?
He was a killer. First time that I saw him, wonder how many girls he had left and left haunted. But if he's a ghost, then I can be a phantom, holding him for ransom. Some boys are trying too hard.
Yeah.
Don't
try it
all. We good?
Okay. Yeah, that works now. For some odd reason, you got transferred to my computer speakers for a split second. But I fixed it because that's what I do with problems.
You're like a regular sound engineer over there.
You know, it's I am often considered the next Butch Vig. The Butch Vig of podcasting is what they call me on the streets.
See the Nirvana producer?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of sort of obscure.
It's the only producer I could think of.
How about Kanye West?
Wait, no. I'm the Quincy Jones. I'm the DJ Khaled of podcasting. That one actually may be more accurate.
That's more current.
Yeah, I'm just as useful as him.
Kanye West did some beats for Jay-Z back in the day. That's how he got his break.
Really?
Yeah.
I always wonder how that shit works.
What do you mean?
Like,
welcome to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. What do you mean?
I don't get this. Like, what's a rapper? Like, everybody likes the music part of a song. Who gives a fuck about the guy who's, like, talking real fast in the back? Like, you don't even, like, understand what he's saying 90% of the time. All everyone knows, like, the cool beat that goes along with it. That's what people like. It's like you know, the rapper's like the lyricist. Like, nobody gives a fuck. Have you ever read the lyrics to any Led Zeppelin song? They're fucking insane. The dude is high off his ass, and he liked Lord of the Rings a lot. Not a joke. And so a lot of Led Zeppelin is about Lord of the Rings. Doesn't make the songs any worse. So I don't care. Like, I don't know what these guys like. I want to hear, you know, your, and I know there's more to it. But damn it. It's too much juking and jiving.
For here's a comparison I could give you. Like, somebody like Demetrius Johnson. We know he's great, one of the best fighters of all time. A normal person who doesn't watch MMA that much has never even heard of the guy. They know Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz, maybe John Jones, GSP, Brock, and Ronda. You know what I mean? And it's like anything. If you don't follow rap or a certain sport or, I don't know, whatever art you might be into. I don't know anything about painters or modern art, but I'm sure there's big modern artists out there that people are into and they make a ton of money, and it's just something I don't know about, like Avengers.
Yeah, but at least you understand, like, well, okay, like it's a big action movie. Like, I don't get the rap. Again, it's like the lyricist. Like, nobody gives a fuck about the guy that writes lyrics.
Right, but I mean, some people have an appreciation. Some guys have better, you know, wordplay and flows and punchlines than other guys.
I mean, I guess, but like, to me, Kanye, like, oh, he did beats for Dr. Dre. I'm like, okay, I kind of get that. Like, oh, yeah, he did that stuff because, like, I like his. I mean, I know there's more to it, but like, I've always thought it's kind of like, isn't the most of the guys just fucking are just quote-unquote remixing things all day long. It's like, yeah, the part of the song I like is the part that someone else did. Like, that we all know. It's like, come on.
Right. I mean, Kanye got his break as a producer, but he always wanted to rap, and, like, nobody would let him rap. And eventually he got enough notoriety as a producer. He started producing his own beats. And his first hit was called Through the Wire, which was like a Chaka Khan cover, basically. And he did it right after he got into a bad car crash, and his mouth was wired shut. And it's almost like he's, like, slurring some of his words and mumbling real bad because he was literally had his jaw wired shut when he did the song. That was, like, his first big hit.
That's weird.
It is weird. Good song, though. Huh. If you heard it, you would know it, but it's, like, 15 years old now. It's old.
I forget about that, too. Like, Kanye's been around for a while.
Right. I mean, I saw an interview with him recently where he was talking about the Taylor Swift thing, and he's like, I haven't had any big hits on the radio since the Taylor Swift thing. Like, he thinks pop culture kind of turned on him at that point. And that was, I think, like 08, 09. And he's made some good stuff since then, I think, but it hasn't been that, like, you know, number one hit like that Stronger song he did, or Gold Digger, or those ones. he hasn't had huge hits like that, but...
But you know what, that's also the way of artists, like, especially, like, musicians in general. Like, given that he's a real musician, like, it's one thing if you're Taylor Swift, where you have a team of people doing it for you. Like, Kanye has to actually rely on his own talent. And, like, any artist, like, you know, when was the last time Elton John had a hit? Or Paul McCartney?
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I'm saying. So he's like a gayer Paul McCartney.
Rap is super fickle too. It's like a short career usually because like trends change. It's like once you're like in your mid 30s, like kids don't want to hear you rap anymore. I mean, Jay-Z's kind of managed to hang on, but Eminem, nobody gives a shit about Eminem anymore, and he's still putting out records, but I don't know, they have no impact anymore, and it's like you get to a certain point where you're too old for that gig anymore. People move
it
on.
Seems to me,
the
like
people who
like,
were teenagers when Eminem was popular are now, you know, our age and aren't really listening to rap anymore. They kind of moved on.
It feels like if you reach a level of celebrity and success and fame that you're around for a long enough time, you get famous enough that everybody knows who you are. But that's also at the same point when you start, like, talking about politics, like if you're Kanye or Eminem. But it's also the same point when everybody's like, yeah, you're old. It's like the first sign that an art, like a rapper at least, in this scenario I've concocted on the fly, the first sign that a rapper is out to pasture is he starts talking about politics.
Yeah, but some
weird,
even...
Which is, I know, which also doesn't make a ton of sense given that rap is the most political of music or whatever horseshit I hear people like just like it's like come on, they're singing about bitches and hoes, like like the few rap songs I know, like it's something the bitches smacking the hoes. Wait, no, that's not a rap song, it's a parody. No, that is a rap song. Yeah,
that's Boys in the Hood.
Yeah, fucking A. Anyways, everybody, we usually talk about MMA, but we went on a rap tangent.
Yeah, well, a little stuff is okay. The other thing, it's just like such a short shelf life for pretty much any rapper where it's like you have a couple albums and then people just move on. But I mean, there's like Kendrick Lamar, we've talked about a lot, made fun of you for not knowing who he was, but he does some political stuff too. And I think it just, you know, you can't be 40 years old and rapping and appealing to young kids who are streaming music now. It's just that, you're my dad's age, that sort of thing.
Well,
you know?
That's why I saw like Eminem, just his stuff, which I actually really like Eminem. Which you know, I'm a white guy, I guess it works for me. And I like his, like I don't know about his most recent album, but the album before that with like Rap God on it and stuff. Like I really liked that album a lot. Like I enjoyed it a great deal. There are superlatives you can insert here, but there is like some part of me that's like. It's like the band Korn. Like I grew up liking Korn and like I liked a lot of hard rock and shit like that for a while. And I remember even back then it was kind of like, all right, like I was like in high school a bit. This is your fourth album. Like, aren't you like out of things to complain about? And I really think there is something to that with like most of these artists. Like, yeah, they're great because they come along, but holy shit, dude! Like, you're worth millions of dollars and have like supermodels all over you.
Right.
I don't care if your mom was mean to you.
Right.
Get over it, Eminem. Like, you are, like, you're, like, come on, man. Like, and I know, like, you can't exactly sit there and be like, I don't think anybody wants, like, Eminem to rap and really sing about his everyday life. It'd be really weird. Be like, I went to the fucking, I don't know how many times you can say fucking cunt and motherfucker or whatever in a song about taking your kid to preschool. So maybe they gotta fake it. I don't know.
And I think stuff evolves too. Like they talk about like mumble rap a lot now. Like there's this younger scene out there where it's like they're mumbling. You can't like Future and Lil Yachty and whatever. That and like Tekashi 6ix9ine and Lil Xan. Like all the it's a different genre. It's a different thing, and that's what kids listen to now. And it's like, I don't want to say Kanye is desperate for publicity, but it's like he's got his own record going out, a record he's doing with Lil Cudi, and he produced a Nas album, all coming out 1 week in succession of each other, one after another, 3 weeks in a row. So I think he's trying to get press, and it's like people are freaking out about whatever he's saying. They agree with him, they disagree with him, whether it's politics. One minute he's tweeting Emma Gonzalez pictures. The next minute he's got a Make America Great Again hat. I think he's just trying to get publicity, and it's working. Everybody's talking about him. He's got the number one trending video on YouTube. It's an hour and a half sit-down interview with him, with Charlemagne the God. It's like he's working it, and I think people are playing into it, both sides, and to a degree it's kind of genius, and people are going to want to see what he says on this album, and they're going to buy it. If he hadn't gone back on Twitter and started making these tweets 2 weeks ago, most people wouldn't even know he had an album coming out.
Oh, that, I mean, that's for sure. And with Kanye, like, I kind of get the impression with Kanye, and actually probably like a lot of these super self, I mean, because Kanye is a special breed of narcissist, let's mm-hmm. be honest here. I mean,
oh, yeah.
But that these guys, they live in this world where, like, we would think of it as, like, you know, it's calculated marketing, where, but like his world view, the way his brain works now, he really does believe that marketing and all this stuff is, it's all one. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like the way he's talking about like making a clothing line, he had something like, there's something like an Apple for clothes or something like that. And I was like, well, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, we have Nike shoot. There's no Apple for, there's fucking Nikes. What are you fucking insane? But like, he just lives in this world where he says weird shit. And I think he sees like everything is performance art.
I agree. And I think people forget that here's the thing. Like, a lot of modern pop stars go away and come back because you get burnt out on them. You know, they go away for 2 years and they put it out on an album. It's not like one after another. Like, you haven't heard from Taylor Swift in a while. There hasn't been Rihanna in a while.
She didn't have last
year.
There
hasn't been Kanye. But I'm just saying, she hasn't had any singles out or anything. I'm just saying, they take a hiatus because you'll get sick of them. It's just how it works. And he's been gone for a while, now he's back, and it's like, whether it's Taylor Swift in the VMAs, or him saying George Bush doesn't care about black people, he's been saying and doing he was asking Steve Jobs for a loan on Twitter. He's been doing and saying crazy shit for the last 10 years. I think people just kind of forgot, and all the furor over Donald Trump and all the drama and everything, he's just feeding off of it, and it's working. And he probably was friendly with Trump years ago. I mean, he was there when he first won the election at Trump Tower. People have seemed to mm-hmm. forget that, but this isn't like a new thing for him, and it's just like, I think he's playing people, and I think he knows it, and he's getting press, and it's working. So, I mean, good on him. And in general, I don't take a lot of anything he says seriously, because Beyonce made the greatest video of all time. Like, he's got these famous phrases and sayings, and even some of his songs are wacky about bleaching buttholes and all sorts of stuff. It's like he looks for drama and controversy, and he's living with the Kardashians, who are kind of known for that and getting publicity however way they can, and they're making a lot of money doing it. But I don't think people are looking deep enough into it at that level. They just think he's either this free thinker or he's a total jackass for supporting Trump, but it's like, Obama called him a jackass 5 years ago. It's, you know,
that seemed to really bother Kanye too. Like, yeah, I like that Kanye kept bringing that up, and like a red part of the interview. And I thought, is there some weird deal where like Obama insults people and 4 years later they get revenge and reorient the culture? Is this some weird, like, do we have to like look and see the, like, did Obama mic drop somebody and say, I don't know, 2015 or so, that we got to look out for, so that guy's gonna like end up like, you know, directing the biggest movie of all time? So like, it was Joss Whedon. I don't know, that this one's gone,
but it's funny because Trump did get dissed by Obama at one of those
correspondence dinner.
And then next year he becomes president. Like, a lot of people said that, like, I know it's bullshit, but Trump got offended by that and ended up running for president and winning office because Obama said he couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, I really do hope that's true, because it does seem like it's there's like a 95% chance it could be true. I mean, really, it's Donald Trump. But I will say one final thing on Kanye, which I found very fascinating with all this. It's like, everything you said is pretty much true. But that's always, in a weird way, like how the right wing has always looked at celebrities. Like, they've always been very celebrity averse. When we have had, like, right wing celebrities, they've always been kind of unique and quirky. Like, you know, Charlton Heston was just pure guns and things like that. And, like, you always knew who they were. And those guys never spoke like celebrities. They didn't act like celebrities. You know, they were just kind of like, they were famous for acting, but, you know, they weren't really the celebrity type. Kanye is, like, the first time in a while, like, I can see somebody. And what I think has kind of been overlooked, I would say, almost everywhere, because if you're on the left, you're sitting there going, he's a jackass. Like, they're almost, like, reflexively going with, like, the, wait a second, like, all the things that the right has always said about celebrities, they're saying, and they're all true, which is, this guy's a moron, who cares what some jackass on Twitter says, like, who cares, you're all being played, whatever. And on the right, they're kind of reveling in it. I don't think they understand exactly why, and I think my theory here is, when he's basically said, like, I'm a free thinker, that's become a thing all of a sudden. Like, that is, overnight, that's become this weird, like, pop culture thing. And it's a kind of language that you never see from the right, because it's a very artistic, you know, artsy entertainer type of way of thinking and speaking. And all of a sudden, what Kanye did, what was brilliant about that, I don't know if intentional or whatever, is that it created this new paradigm by which everything is viewed. In his world, it's, I'm just a free thinker. I'm not the... And it worked in a way that he cast it as, I'm a free thinker, therefore you're not. And Republicans just... It just isn't a thing, because they've never had that celebrity impulse like that. And Kanye speaks in those weird pop culture-y type of things, and all of a sudden it's like, now it's going to be cool because you want to be a free thinker. And even, you know, if it goes away or whatever it is, it opens a door for others to be like, hey man, I'm a fucking free thinker too. Like, it's just weird.
It's a great cover to just spew whatever kind of bullshit you want too. I mean, you can come, you can be in favor of gun control and anti-abortion and pro-death penalty, and just say you're a free thinker, and you can say or do whatever you want, and nobody can question it.
And he gets away with it, you know. Again, like if like Tom Selleck, I think he's a Republican. Like, if Tom Selleck was like, "I'm a free thinker," he'd be like, "What the fuck are you talking about? That's really stupid." But if Kanye says it, you're kind of like, Kanye is really weird, but he's so talented that, you know, like, he's obviously has a genius IQ in some realms. I mean, what he does is truly a genius. So when people see, it's kind of like why people listen to, you know, any athlete or successful person. Like, people assume that if you're really, really good at one thing, that your opinions on other things also matter. It's like we're always, like, listening to really rich people. It's like, why the fuck does anybody listen to Bill Gates about anything? He knows computers, and that's it. Bill Gates doesn't know shit about how to solve poverty. That is so beyond what he does. There's an expert. There are people who are genius experts on how to solve poverty. And would you, if they then said, if Jane Goodall came out there and was like, hey, this is how a computer operating system should run, you'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? So why do we listen to Bill Gates on monkeys?
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that with Trump becoming president.
I think that's part of it. We're in a weird fucking time, man. People absolutely responded to Trump because they go, hey, you know, he's successful, he's done this, he's done that. Which, in fairness, like with any politician, you're almost always electing them based on what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, I mean, because, like, I don't even know how you have how do you show success in the world of, like, I've been a politician, what did you accomplish? I kept getting elected. Okay, what are you going to do for me? No. I just get elected. That's my job here. I don't know. What do you mean do for you? Like, some bureaucrat does things. I just get elected.
Well, it's funny. When people were all excited for Oprah to run in 2020 against Trump, I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, I don't want to say she is Trump, but she's a TV personality with no experience in politics. And that was, like, one of the main gripes people had with Trump when he was first going into office. It's like, why would you elect someone else who's got very similar credentials? They're a TV personality who's made billions of dollars and is a good business person, but they've got no experience in politics. What does Oprah know about North Korea, Iraq, any domestic policy? It's like, she's got no experience. It's like I would vote for her.
I'm now at the point when I see that North Korea is just like doing everything they can to make us happy. Maybe we don't need experience. Maybe experience really is fucking it up, and we just need somebody that goes in there, rolls the dice. Oprah may fucking knock it out of the park. Maybe we bring in Oprah, and goddamn, 4 years later, we're like, I can't believe it. She fucking got the Israel-Palestine thing. Those people are best friends. They have a joint soccer team. Holy shit, they even created their own, like, Israeli-Palestinian flag. They renamed the country Palestine. It's just amazing. I actually do think with Oprah and Trump, the one thing that they have going for them as opposed to like a pure celebrity is that their celebrity is in the realm of semi-political. Like, Trump's a successful businessman. Well, we've had lots of businessmen run for politics and do things. And Oprah is kind of, in many respects, like America's most famous community activist. You know, she's like the community organizer. She brings people together. She talks. She's got this... She's crafted this brilliant image as basically like America's nice grandmother, who is probably gay. But we all let it go. Just like, you know, if deep down you're like, yeah, Grandma spends a lot of time with her friend Maude, you'd be like, yeah, but Grandma's awesome. Like, I know. She's got, you know, all those billions. We're just waiting for her to croak.
Do you think Trump played any role in the North Korea-South Korea thing, or would it have happened if Pence was in office?
Trump played a role because he sets the tone of these things. Like, there's, look at it this way. He has done so much about North Korea. It's very publicly done things with it that I can't imagine that North Korea hasn't heard about it and that hasn't factored into this at all.
I don't know. But maybe it's been years and it's the son in charge now and they decided to get together with South Korea. Maybe what
All these things are all great successes in politics is some part skill and just fortuitous timing. You know, I mean, like, George W. Bush probably does not get reelected except for 9/11 happened. Like, it's just kind of, and all of a sudden that cast him in a new light, and he was a different president and so on and so forth, and, you know, my rule of thumb is kind of always, if you blame the guy, you got to credit the guy. And, like, I don't credit him for the economy, because the same way I wouldn't blame him for the economy. In short term. Long term things, maybe he nudges it. But again, we're talking like steering a barge.
I just don't know. Yeah. I mean, I obviously neither of us know what goes on behind the scenes and behind closed doors, but. I can't imagine his tweets made a difference, but maybe they did. Maybe somebody translated Trump's tweets to Kim Jong-un and he decided to call up South Korea. Maybe.
I think it does make a difference in the sense of unless you're going to war, all international politics is just discussion. And between the tweets or the speeches in front of the United Nations, the little rocket man, all these things, you know, Trump has been, he's clearly took a different approach to North Korea than it's been taken recently. Very confrontational.
Right.
Fuck, man. Maybe, again, it could just be that Trump recognized who his opponent was, or it's just dumb luck. Maybe it is dumb luck. Probably is dumb luck. There's a lot of dumb luck follows these billionaires married to supermodels around, you know? This is weird how, it's like Obama just always got really, really lucky, huh? Unlike Hillary Clinton, who never got lucky ever. You've never once looked at Hillary Clinton's entire career and go, she got a lucky break there. Like, that woman fought for everything. She just scraped and clawed. There never once did the ball bounce her way.
I feel like you're being facetious.
No, I'm actually really not. Like, Hillary Clinton did not have breaks. Like, she was a ruthless, she was smart. But, like, you know, she never really won an election in her life. The only election she ever won was
New York Senate,
which was essentially a gimme for a Democrat. Otherwise, like, you know, she positioned herself. She got the Secretary of State. She did this. She did that. She's just incredibly smart. Like, nobody would look at Hillary Clinton and go, oh, yeah, she just fell ass backwards into that one. People say that about Trump with everything, and those are the people that like him. You know, like, those are his kids are being like, yeah, sometimes dad just closes his eyes and gets a hole in one. Some people are just born with a horseshoe up their ass, like Frank Mir.
Speaking of Frank Mir, he fought at Bellator 198 on Saturday night against Fedor Emelianenko in Rosemont, Illinois at the Allstate Arena. Unfortunately, he did not have the horseshoe up his ass this time. He got knocked out at 48 seconds of the first round by Fedor. Exciting fight while it lasted. This was something else. They were just throwing shots left and right. Mir rocked Fedor early, and then Fedor came back. Hit him with, like, I think it was a short left hand.
Like a ridge hand.
Yeah, it wasn't a big deal. And then Mir went down face first. Fedor kind of got on his back and landed some shots with his left, and the ref stopped it, and it was over. And Fedor got a big win to the shock of many, including me. I had Mir win in this fight. So Fedor advances in the Bellator heavyweight tournament.
Yeah, I can't say I didn't see it coming, but I didn't predict it either. The way these two fought, it was entertaining, really sad.
I liked it.
Heavyweight MMA in general, but Bellator heavyweight MMA, my word, this is just people playing chicken with their chins.
Right.
I mean, and it's like they're sprinting too. Like, you could tell both guys essentially knew one of us is going to die here. It's not going after the first round. I just got to make sure I hit him before he hits me, which is like that's like way more terrifying for me than a normal fight. Like, in a normal fight, you might be like, I'm going to strategize. I'm going to duck. I'm going to weave. Maybe I'll take him down a little bit. Like, these guys are playing with essentially, like, even if I took him down, just one clear uppercut from the bottom would knock me out. Like, I have no margin of error on this. It's kind of like Mission Impossible. You're breaking in. You can't touch the floor or anything like that. Like, it's just really kind of tense that way. And then after it's over, Fedor kind of walks around. It's kind of like, what the fuck just happened? And He kept cocky. He had weird promos before and after the fight. Really weird. Like, he kept talking about how, like, it's important for me to be seen like this ambassador for Russia and this and that. And it's just fucking, I don't know, I'm sure it was the drugs. But I'm just sitting there watching it going, who thinks like this? Like, when you go to, like, if I went to, like, France and fought, I wouldn't say, like, it's important for me to be an ambassador for my country and uphold the values. And be like, what? No. I have a feeling that somebody may have a gun to the back of one of his children's head back there in Russia. And he's got to toe the party line and be like, it's just so Soviet Union-y.
Remember, didn't his daughter get beat up or something? And she got her ass kicked in the street. Somebody, like, beat the shit out of her, right?
I don't remember
that
story at all.
After he came out against the child MMA, somebody like beat the crap out of his daughter.
Only in Russia would somebody come out in opposition of children's cage fighting, and then the street thugs beat the shit out of your kid for it.
I think that's what happened.
First of all, what kind of fuck kind of country is it where there's any controversy when you come out against children in cage fights? I know it's a cultural thing, but it's like when coming out against cockfighting. Like, who are the people that are supporting? But it happens, they're called Mexicans. It's like dogfighting? Oh, that's a thing in the black community. I never really realized it. And I started reading, like, what the fuck? It's like, they don't talk about it. But I'm like, who wants to, like, permit dogfighting? This is horrible. They're doggies. Like, who's in favor of bullfighting? Eh? Certain people are. So this is a white man's ignorance where we assume the noble savages out there, but my friends, they're not noble savages. They're just savages.
So back in October 12th, 2016, Karim Zidane, one of my favorite reporters in the world, with the most niche job in the world, he covers like Chechenian warlord MMA. He wrote this.
By the way, how smart was that dude? Like,
yeah.
All things being said, like, oh boy, those chickens are coming home to roost right now. Like, that dude's really got a fucking, his niche is expanding. Suddenly Russian and Ukrainian relations in America, it's a big fucking deal.
Like, he was probably looking around the world like, what country should I pick here? I know a little Russian. My grandmother was Russian. I'll get into Russian MMA, I guess. But
you're like, I'm going to corner the market on the Bolivian mixed martial arts scene. And then, like, 6 months from now, the first UFO ever lands in Bolivia. You'd be like, well, I fucking nailed that one.
Like, at an MMA show.
And then somebody beat up the alien, and we had to, like, and they're from Illinois or something.
So Fedor's daughter, who was 16 at the time, was on her way home from school when she was attacked by unnamed assailants and assaulted in the process. She was kicked in the chest, an attack that left a noticeable bruise on her body. The report added that the girl was transferred to the Research Institute of Children's Emergency Surgery and Traumatology, where she was diagnosed with contusion of the chest and the abdomen. According to the police who arrived, once it became clear that Emelianenko's daughter had been assaulted, the victim was unwilling to identify the assailants. Perhaps she was intimidated by those who attacked her.
Oh, okay. I assume that like everyone in Russia just gets beat up on the street every once in a while. My imagination, there's just a country full of roaming gangs of young violent men who just, skinheads are throwing Molotov cocktails at people and bashing them in the head with beer bottles and shit like that. Like Trainspotting, but in Russia.
The incident, which occurred on October 9th, coincides with the timing of Fedor's condemnation of the child MMA fights in Chechnya, hosted by Chechen dictator Ramzan Kadyrov. In a social media post, Fedor explained that what happened in Grozny is unacceptable and cannot be justified. His comments prompted an investigation by the Kremlin and the Commissioner for Children's Rights in the Russian Federation, but also drew the attention of Kadyrov's cronies and henchmen in Chechnya. So, I mean, basically what he's hinting at here is Kadyrov had guys beat up Fedor's daughter for coming out against child MMA fights. What a country.
It could, even better though, it could be any number of organized crime figures that have a problem with him. I'm sure he's pissed off somebody because he won a fight or didn't win a fight, and it just occurred to me, like, this, that Chechen fucker who denies the existence of homosexuals and all that, it's essentially what happens if Al Capone wins. You know, like, they get big. They're not taking over the whole country, but they have just enough that everybody's like, this ruthless motherfucker runs Illinois now, and what are we going to do? We're not going to go to war over Illinois. Take it.
So post-fight, we had Chael Sonnen get into the cage and kind of cut a promo on Fedor. So the next fight for Fedor is going to be Chael Sonnen, which is probably what Bellator would have wanted when they put this tournament together.
Oh, yeah. Plus, we get to continue the streak of the old-school original Team Quest members beating the shit out of Fyodor. Matt Lindland almost did it. Should have got the win over him. Henderson did it. Now, right. Chael's going to... I bet anything Chael wins this one. I bet it's easy.
How does he do it?
I think he finishes him with ground and pound. Well, Fyodor does have some little bit of armbar, but I just think Chael is a much healthier fighter. Like, Chael's not had a precipitous drop like a lot of guys have. Like,
Chael lost to Tito.
I know, but he beat Wanderlei. And
wow!
I know. Well, look, that's better. Point is, Chael is essentially the same fighter he's always been. He's just a little slower, a little older version of it. Where Fyodor's just, like, gone.
Yeah.
Like, everything he was is gone. Plus, he was always overrated, and, Chael's charming. You know, he's going to get me. He's going to convince me that he's going to win. So I'm just going to get on board now.
Okay.
I really don't respect Fyodor at all.
Yeah. Fyodor is 6 months older than Chael, for what it's worth.
Oh, I know, but those are Russian years.
True,
I mean,
they
Russian
are
year, years in Russia versus living in Oregon. Like, I don't know if you could be two completely opposite ends of the world than those places.
Have you been to the mean streets of West Lynn?
No. But from what I understand, Chael grew up very similar to how I pretty much grew up. And I did not grow up in an environment where they would have taught you how to survive a war or anything. Like, I grew up in an environment where I would call someone if war broke out. And I have a feeling Chael did as well.
Manny Sanchez defeated Sam Cecilia by submission and arm triangle choke at 3:52 of the first round. I think he cinched it up while they were standing against the cage, right?
Yeah, he was like, they're kind of clinched up, exchanging knees, and kind of ducked under, like he was going to take the back, and found himself there, grabbed it, and locked it in. He couldn't get the leverage to finish the choke while standing, so he just pulled guard, dragged him down, basically, and finished it on the ground, and I don't know, I still don't really understand why Sam Cecilia was fighting on my television set, but good win for Manny.
Bellator.
He cut a good promo afterwards.
What did he say? I missed it.
Oh, he just basically, like, demanded a title shot. It was just well-spoken, like, you want to do it right here in Chicago? I'm from the, you know, Milwaukee. But, like, dude, I want to do it in front of my friends and family and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, anytime I see a dude try, I'm like, hey, good for you. You gave it a shot.
Yeah. Rafael Lovato Jr. defeated Gerald Harris with a very nice armbar, 111 of the first round.
Yeah, he pulled guard in an awkward-looking way and just threw up a high guard, looked like he faked a triangle, rolled him over, grabbed an armbar. It was kind of like how you would show that transition, that linking of submissions in a class. It's like, oh, yeah, like everybody saw it coming, and Gerald Harris sucks.
I mean, he's been around a while. He had some fights in the UFC. It's not like he's terrible. He was 25-5 headed into the fight. He's older now, but a good win for Lovato, who's only got like 6 fights, I think, right?
Yeah, no, it's very impressive for Lovato. I know Gerald Harris is essentially retired. He does a lot of stand-up comedy now. And, I mean, it's not good. Like, it's really, really not good. It's even more awkward because I hear people laughing, so I don't know what the fuck they're laughing at. I'm like, ooh, that's... Even I think that's homophobic. Like, what the fuck, dude?
Lovato is 8-0 now, and Harris fought twice in 2017. It's not like he's totally inactive, so...
He still sucks.
Anyway, I'm not saying he's great, but for Lovato, it's the biggest win of his career over a guy who's got 30 fights, you know?
It is Rafael Lovato. Almost every one of his most recent wins is going to be the biggest win of his career, because not like he's fought a lot of real... guys.
True. I'm just saying, he looked good in this fight against a guy who's decent and has been around and was a UFC fighter for a couple of years. Prior to that, we had Neiman Gracie defeating Javier Torres, another submission on this show, another arm triangle, this one at 3:18 in the second.
Yeah, he just fucking clamped that. When he clamped that thing on and he started really like walking around and getting it, it was just like, oh, yeah, that guy knows what he's fucking doing there, doesn't he? It was pretty nice. Like the night of squash matches with submission finishes.
Yeah, Gracie now moves to 8-0 as well. He has 2 wins in World Series of Fighting and now 6 straight in Bellator. No big names, but, you know, it's funny because Bellator is trying to build guys. Like, none of these guys are catching on at all. What's his name? Gallagher. They've got Gracie, Lovato, you know, Aaron Pico, Ed Ruth. There's a lot of guys that they've been slowly building, but there's like no momentum with any of them, which also shows in their ratings, but they're trying. And in the opener, they had another guy debut in Dylan Danis. He defeated Kyle Walker with a toe hold at 138 of the first. Danis was kind of darting in and out on the feet, took a couple shots, but got a takedown and got the submission pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what happens when real world-class jiu-jitsu guys get in there against a certain level of cage fighter.
Sure.
And, you know, the submission guys are going to win. It's funny because Bellator, like, if you were to think of, like, boxing promoters, like, they're trying to groom a guy and bring him along. Like, Bellator is actually... is like managing careers outstanding. They're matching guys up at the appropriate skill level. They're taking it slow. The guys aren't getting hurt. They're getting a little bit of exposure. But yeah, they're not making these guys stars at all. I mean, Dylan Danis has the best chance of all of them, just because he talks a lot of shit. Right. And like, I already want to see him get beat up, so that's a positive. But
it was funny. But I feel like the interview with him after the fight, he called out Ben Askren, who doesn't even fight for the company and is still under contract to 1FC.
I did see something about that, and it's funny because, I mean, with the amount of shit Danis talks, and the kind of semi-high profile he has, this would be like the biggest fight in Ben Askren's career. Like, it would be like his most high-profile fight. He'd probably get more attention for this than he would for anything else.
Probably. It's funny, too, with Askren, because I feel like there's more demand to see him fight now that he's retired. Like, if he was still fighting in, what is it, 1FC? Do I have that right? Yeah. Whatever it is. Nobody gave a shit. He fought there, like, six times, and nobody cared. It's funny
nature,
that
now it's
that
the nature of the beast.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder, yeah.
Yeah, that, and he was undefeated, and anytime a guy is undefeated and he's got some name, and, you know, he's fought, like, you know, it's a certain level there. I got something in my throat. Sorry, dog. He's looking at me like, what the fuck would you do that for? I'm just laying here, and you're just hacking at me.
Oh,
yeah, go put your
how dare he after the kennel cough? Fuck him.
Yeah, exactly, you little bastard.
What a double standard.
It's like women and the workplaces. Dogs can do things I can't. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Ben Askren's undefeated. He talks shit. He's got, you know, a long enough win streak. Plus, his contemporaries are either, you know, retired or they've lost. So he's kind of like it's just him and GSP as far as, like, that class of fighter who, you know, remain these mythical, oh, this is the best of that generation. You know, we haven't fully transitioned to the Kamaru Usman, Darren Till, Colby Covington, apparently Rafael Dos Anjos, you know, era. There's still a little bit of a holdover from those guys. So, you know, people are going to always mythologize him. Plus, he was on Joe Rogan, and that was probably seen by more people than saw every one of his Bellator fights combined.
It's possible. I don't have the number for the gate, but this was supposedly the second biggest gate Bellator has ever done, besides their New York show, so that was good. However, the ratings weren't great. I think last week they did like 244,000 viewers on Paramount. This time they did 581,000 on Paramount and 169,000 on CMT. So they roughly did, you know, 750,000 viewers between two channels for this thing, which, you know, for Fedor versus Mir, they don't have many fights bigger than that. I wouldn't say it's good. It's definitely an increase from 242,000, but, you know, I think you would want 1 million viewers for Fedor and Mir.
Yeah, probably, but, I mean, this is where Bellator's at. They're never going to do anything really big. You know, they have a couple of freak things here with the Kimbos or whatever, but for the most part, they're an old-timers promotion, and, you know, they were in a more fractionalized society than ever. I think that, you know, 750,000 viewers now is probably the equivalent of 1 million viewers from 3 years ago, just through, you know, choices we have and all that. And, I mean, I don't know. I guess I just have no expectations at all for basically anything, especially anything to do with this company, let alone life in general, but especially this company. Like, I don't know, like, I expect them to go out there and make some money and be kept alive and appear on the Paramount Network, which is just a terrible name. Like, really, Paramount Network sounds like a television network for really old people. Like, you'd be in your 80s watching the Paramount Network. Nobody's sitting at home with their girlfriend, like, at 19, being like, hey, baby, want to flip on the Paramount Network? Like, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, it's weird, too, because Spike in MMA made sense. You know what I mean? It was like a male-oriented network, and, you know, they had dumbass shows like Cops and 101 Ways to Get Killed or Murdered or whatever it was, and, like, it kind of made sense. And now it's like, I couldn't tell you any other show on the Paramount Network. I know they used to have, like, Bar Rescue on Spike, but I don't even know if that's still on there. That used to be their highest-rated show.
They've done more. Like, they've had that Waco miniseries. They have another one coming up. Like, they've actually had some miniseries. Like, I'm not going to probably watch them because there's so much television out. But they looked like they were not half bad, all things considered. And, they've seemed to put a lot of money into trying to make it more of a prestige network. It's good luck, guys. Good luck. Good luck running a television network in this day and age. Like,
what? Yeah. I just wonder what their long-term branding plan is. Does it even include MMA? Like, I guess they own Bellator, so they'll have to keep it on one of the networks, because I think Viacom bought Bellator. So they'll have to keep it on somewhere, but I wouldn't be surprised if they switch channels or put it on one. They've got to have a sports network. Viacom must.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a CBS sports network or something like that.
So we shall see what happens with Bellator, but it's been a rough few months, I would say.
Months, years, entire existence.
I'm just saying.
Seriously, they're as good now as they've ever have been. At least they've had the opening round of tournaments that's gone off without a hitch. We're not on our third alternate yet. This is a huge win for Scott Coker.
He's got a job, so yeah.
Did you see where they made Krokop versus Roy Nelson an alternate? It's an alternate heavyweight title fight.
Didn't see that. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Bellator 200, yeah.
I was really sad, though, because that pretty much precludes... And I don't think Glover Teixeira is coming in, but I was really hoping for somebody from outside. I guess Krokop would be pretty damn close. I mean, yeah, that'd be pretty good, as long as it's somebody from outside the company, but I really wanted Glover to do it.
I really wanted Rory McDonald to get in and win the heavyweight tournament. I think that would have been hilarious.
Totally plausible.
He said he wanted to be an alternate. Weird alternate fight too, like Javi Ayala versus Chuck Congo or something. I think Congo's an alternate too. He'd be funny winning the whole thing.
Anybody's gonna be funny winning the whole thing. No matter who wins this whole thing, on some level it's gonna be funny. If it's Ryan Bader, I'm gonna kind of laugh. If it's Fyodor, I'm gonna just laugh and cackle. If it's Chael, I'm gonna just praise it as the greatest thing they've ever done. There's so many great outcomes for this shit show.
Yeah, the least entertaining is Matt Mitrione.
Yeah, but that might be the best. Because it would just be like, you'd be like, oh, we went through all that and Matt Mitrione won, huh? The guy that I watched teammates of mine beat at Naga tournaments. The guy that was competing in the same tournaments that I was. This guy is your heavyweight tournament champion. This is your big star, Matt Mitrione, the dude most famous for having a gigantic hematoma. Ooh.
And then after he wins, he just goes back to UFC. That would be the ultimate.
Yeah. Oh, I assume the winner of this goes back to the UFC. They should just admit it. Just make it like Dana White's Tuesday Night Fights are going to get Nick Newell in. They could just use this to get somebody else in.
Speaking of Askren, did you see that Scott Coker said he wasn't interested in bringing him in for just one fight? Like, because Askren and Rory McDonald are kind of building a fight up on Twitter, going back and forth, and Coker basically said he has no interest in bringing him in for one fight. He wants fighters to sign long-term deals, and apparently that's part of the issue with getting Askren in there.
But bringing in Fyodor or Krokop, because those are guys you expect to fight many, many times on their deal.
Yeah, absolutely. On the topic of Fyodor, we should bring up this article I found in a paper called The Washington Post. Headline reads, MMA fighter with links to Trump, Cohen, is questioned by FBI. A Russian mixed martial arts fighter who has connections with President Donald Trump, the president's personal attorney Michael Cohen, and Russian President Vladimir Putin was questioned this week by the FBI, his manager confirmed on Saturday. Emelianenko was questioned by agents who met him in his hotel room on Tuesday. Manager Jerry Millen said before Emelianenko's Bellator MMA heavyweight fight against Frank Mir, Millen declined
Jerry
to detail.
Jerry fucking Millen.
Millen declined to detail his client's conversations with the agents. The FBI came to the hotel looking to talk to Fyodor, and they were very nice. Came in to speak with Fyodor for a few minutes, spoke to me. Very cool guys, and that's all I can say really about it. Again, the FBI did come to the hotel. They found us, knocked on the door. 100% kind of surprised. They were very nice, very professional.
I bet this is two, like, FBI agents who are fight fans just using an excuse to meet him.
The article
they're
goes
looking,
on.
They're looking, they're going, wait a second. I saw that picture. Yeah, with him and... I bet we can meet him. Yeah. I would say it's for the Putin thing. Yeah.
The article goes on to say, the agents were in attendance at Saturday's fight.
There we go. That's all you need to know about that one. I read that article, or a similar article, and they talked like, I guess Michael Cohen was more involved with it than, like, I have no idea.
With affliction. With affliction, yeah. I think, yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe that it kind of took this long. I mean, there's pictures of Donald Trump with Fyodor. He's getting his picture taken with a Russian athlete. Like, hello? This looks exactly like something you'd investigate. Not like, did he tweet something to somebody one time using code words or whatever? Like, by the way, if you ever want to see really crazy fuckers, I don't call them, like, right-wing, but they're, like, Alex Jones type, but they're, like, kind of, like, apolitical conspiracy nuts. Holy shit, some of these guys, the way they talk about, like the guys that make, like the Pizzagate people, mm-hmm. Look at these guys like, oh, you're out of your fucking mind. Like, some of these guys, it's like, everything's got this code, and there's this and that, and they're so, like, they think everything's a code. Every tweet, they're like, if you see it, man, look, he put quotes around, like, arbitrary. That means there's a kid being raped in the ass. It's like, what the fuck? They all seem to know this secret code. I don't know why the Illuminati communicates by secret code via Twitter, but that's how it works these days, everybody. All the technology, they don't use WhatsApp or anything like that. They use Twitter.
This is good. This just came up, popped up from Yahoo. President Donald Trump's new lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, said Wednesday that Trump repaid his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, for a $130,000 payment to porn star Stormy Daniels, directly contradicting the president's past statements. During an appearance on Fox News Channel, Giuliani said the money had been funneled through the law firm and the president repaid it. Asked if Trump knew about their arrangement, Giuliani said he didn't know about the specifics of it as far as I know, but he did know about the general arrangement that Michael would take care of things like this, like I take care of things like this for my clients. I don't burden them with every single thing that comes along. These are busy people.
I mean, I know my clients have always just said, Mike, whenever the whores come out and accuse me of having had sex with them, just give them the money they're asking for. Like, that's your arrangement. Although, again, not really implausible. Like, it makes a lot of sense to me that Donald Trump just has lawyers that he goes like, hey, look, you're my guy. When people come to extort me, I want you to handle it. I don't want to deal with this stuff. And it's probably true. Like, I think that's right. The thing with Donald Trump at the end of the day is like, it all sounds like shady because, like, people, like, if you and I did it, it would be shady. But, like, what do you mean you have a lawyer that just hands out $130,000 to porn stars and you don't know about it? That's insane. Donald Trump's world? Absolutely. Right. So what you're not hearing about is the 15 others that aren't speaking up because they know how to honor their agreements.
Well, the thing that I find funny about it is, like, why is Giuliani saying this? It's like, just shut the fuck up.
I know. He's saying it because he's part of the Trump White House, and maybe they're just doing this on purpose now. Like, they can't all be this, I don't want to say incompetent. Like, everybody's doing this? all of you are just, come on. You're all watching the same TV shows I'm watching. Like, I know that's how the country's being run. When you say, like, we don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. No. I do. I don't really watch Fox and Friends, but if I wanted to, I could turn it on. I'd know then what's going on behind the scenes in the White House. Like, you could watch that show and have a really good idea about what's going to be on Donald Trump's agenda for the next week. That's just how it is. So, and I know, I watch Hannity and Tucker or whatever, like, I know what they're saying. I know what they know. Giuliani should know it too. So I don't know what these do. Maybe they really are just out there just throwing it all out there. Because it's all so stupid. Or, I don't know, maybe they got one guy, you only handle the Russia stuff, and you only handle the horror stuff, and they're not talking to each other yet. I
don't... It's such a mess. It's unbelievable. It's better than I anticipated it would be. So Fyodor was questioned by the FBI. I think Fyodor probably didn't provide them with a lot of helpful information for Robert Mueller.
Although we do now live in a timeline where it is very plausible that Fyodor Emelianenko will end up bringing down Donald Trump, only until Kanye West ends up saving Donald Trump and Dennis Rodman averted nuclear war. All of those statements are very, very plausible right now, and that's kind of weird.
UFC and Nate Diaz are in serious talks for an August return. According to multiple sources, the promotion has recently presented Diaz with multiple top five lightweight opponents for a fight this summer, and Diaz has expressed interest in returning at UFC 227 on August 4th in Los Angeles. Diaz wants to be on the card and is interested in at least one name presented to him. Those sources would not confirm who that is at this time. One thing is clear, though, Khabib and Conor haven't been discussed as potential opponents, which leaves Eddie Alvarez, Dustin Poirier, and Kevin Lee as options. Obviously, second-ranked Tony Ferguson is currently rehabbing his knee and would not be ready to fight in August.
I find it more likely that Donald Trump will denuclearize the Korean Peninsula than I do that Nate Diaz will fight in July.
Okay.
I mean, something about, like, Nate Diaz is going to come back and fight. I don't know, it's a Diaz. Like, they just do weird shit. And then again, it would be fitting that he would sit there and throw a fit. Like, I'm going to sit out. I'm a big star. I deserve better, blah, blah, blah. Only to come back and fight Eddie Alvarez. Like, okay, you could have fought Eddie Alvarez at any time over the past 2 years, whatever you've been out of action. It's been two years. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, August 2016. Eddie Alvarez says he's not going to fight unless he gets a new deal, so that fight doesn't appear to be an option.
Ah, the old Leslie Smith tactic.
He told ESPN that he's far from accepting any fight. It's not fucking happening, he said. I'm not fighting until I get a new deal. The only thing we spoke of was resigning, and we haven't come to that agreement yet. So I'm guessing there's not going to be an opponent or a bout agreement in the mail unless I'm ready to resign. So when we come to agreement to resign, then I'm sure there will be a bout agreement in the mail. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with Nate Diaz. I don't see him wanting to fight Kevin Lee. I don't see him wanting to fight Poirier. So I don't know.
Yeah, Eddie Alvarez feels like the kind of guy that Diaz thinks he should fight, because like he's right. A former champion, so I feel like I can see the Diaz brain working, going, yeah, that makes him better and higher ranked or something like that. Is it kind of weird though to see like guys like Eddie Alvarez saying things like, "I'm not going to fight until I get my contract extended." Back in the day, it would be like UFC would say, "You're not going to fight unless you extend your contract."
It's interesting too because. Remember when Conor was making fun of Alvarez for not getting a better deal when he signed that fight for UFC 205? And he's like, I don't need a new deal. I'm happy with my deal. Now all of it's weird. Fighters get punched a lot in the head.
I mean, Conor, I know he's entertaining and all, but sometimes he should just stop. Because what he did to Eddie Alvarez, man, how emasculating is that? He looks at him, he mocks him, he tells him, you suck at making money. Then he beat the fuck out of him in front of everybody. Like, boy, he just made him such a bitch. I bet Eddie couldn't get it up for months after that.
I can't confirm that. I don't have that information.
That'd been a real weird one if you had confirmed it, though.
I know. For breaking news.
Eddie Alvarez is impotent.
UFC flyweight champ Nico Montano blasts MMA Hour host for saying UFC is losing patience with her. Montano is the famous UFC women's flyweight champion. She won the title over Roxy Modafferi.
You know what's really funny is that you said that she's a women's flyweight champion and like 30 mm-hmm. seconds later said it again. And if you hadn't said it again, she's so irrelevant that we might have not known it.
She has been linked to a bout with top contender Valentina Shevchenko, but according to MMA Fighting's Ariel Helwani, UFC has been having trouble getting commitment out of her for a near future event. Montano proceeded to blast Helwani for either not checking her social media to see she was dealing with health issues or ignoring the knowledge, which was readily available on her social media. Helwani's tweet about this wasn't particularly, I don't even know the word, like aggressive.
It wasn't inflammatory at all. It was
pretty benign.
I like anytime anybody takes that hook-nosed Jew down a peg or two. That always makes me happy. But she seemed to really overreact. Like, what he said was basically like, the UFC's losing patience. It wasn't like they're mad at her, necessarily. It was more just kind of, and she basically affirmed, like, I'm sick, I've had this illness, whatever, like, I'm going to get back to training soon. But obviously she's been out. She said the UFC knows I've been out. I'm sure that they are frustrated because they're sitting there going, crap, this is taking longer than we wanted. And boy, it'll look really bad if we crown an interim champion for this division. On the other hand, it would be really funny if we did. So there's like a 50-50 shot we're getting an interim champion for... of course we are. They just did it with, maybe the stripper of the belt, like they did with Jermaine de Randamie. Maybe that's how it works in MMA now. If you create a new division for women, the first person that wins the belt has to give it up.
Maybe. So, Helwani, this is what he wrote. UFC is losing patience with Montano. As I reported last week, the plan was for her to defend the 125 title against Shevchenko in Calgary, but they are having a hard time getting a commitment from her. While it's not scrapped, they are now looking at other options. I mean,
it's benign.
Yeah, no, and then her response was, she wrote like 300 words, probably.
Yeah.
This just in, Ariel Helwani is a huge waste of space. Everyone and their grandma knows about my condition. I'm 5 days post-tonsillectomy and adenoid removal surgery due to a bacterial infection that's been inhibiting my practice all year. Soonest I can get back on the mats is 16 more days. The UFC not only knows about this, but flew me out to Vegas themselves to get this surgery done ASAP so I can jump on getting a fight with Shevchenko lined up. She went on...
Cage fighters should not have to miss a world title fight, title defense, because of their tonsils taken out. This is something you miss a week of school for, not a cage fight. Who the fuck gets their tonsils taken out?
I don't know.
Is that a thing still?
She said bacterial infection. I'm not sure what adenoid is, but that doesn't sound pleasant. Basically, you're getting stuff cut out of your throat.
I thought they pretty much stopped doing tonsillectomies because it's... Somebody went, you know, guys, doing a surgery on children, like putting all these kids under anesthesia, this isn't really safe. They're little kids. Put them under anesthesia and just cutting out part of their throat. This doesn't sound like a really good way to do things. Can we just use medicine? And somebody goes, oh, yeah, that dickhead over there with the penicillin, I bet that'll work. And he goes, yeah, I've been telling you, assholes, let's do it.
This part of her message made me laugh. It's apparently in douchebags' best interest to throw my name out to the wolves in order to stay relevant. She thinks Helwani is covering her to stay relevant? Like, this is the biggest story of her career. You know what I mean?
This is getting way more publicity and news than when she, you know, won the title or did anything in her life. No offense, Nico, if you're listening, which I'm sure you are, but you're irrelevant.
Nico,
you want a reality show title.
Nico has 4,600 Twitter followers and is not verified. Ariel Helwani.
The fact that she's not verified is sad.
Unless, I mean, this is based on a tweet Shevchenko sent out, so maybe she's got the name wrong or the handle wrong. And maybe. Ariel Helwani has 652,000 followers, yet he's really using weird. Her to stay relevant.
That's crazy that he has that many followers.
Yeah, I mean, he's the biggest reporter in MMA. He's been doing it a long time, man.
That's a lot of people. I mean,
I know.
But there's some, like, real celebrities don't have that.
I know. He was interviewing Dana White 12 years ago, you know? I mean, the one thing, like... I don't think he's perfect. I don't love him. I kind of find him boring, but he's busted his ass a long time. Like, he's earned it, in my opinion. But
For as much shit as I give him, and it's mostly because he's a little snobby, as far as, like, being accurate on things like this, I have no reason to ever really doubt him.
Right.
Like, he's rarely does he come out and, like, he doesn't pull, like, the vague stuff. His stuff isn't, like, shit that anybody could kind of, like, deduce. Like, these are real. Like, I think he actually sources things, and some of them is, like, oh, you broke the story an hour beforehand. Like, oh, you talked to the video package guy. But, like, you know he's actually talking to people working angles. Right. Like, Nico's got as many followers. She barely has more followers than we do. Like, really. Like, seriously, Half Guard is, like, around 2,000, and we've never been on television. Then again,
for months, she was on the reality show.
Oh, that's right. I forgot she was on TV for months.
Yeah.
So did everybody else in America. Oh, yeah, Ultimate Fighter's on right now. I knew there was something to watch. Boy, that show is dead.
She went on, I literally haven't spoken a word in 5 days due to my condition, and Mr. Poor Excuse of a Man has not only brought it upon himself to be the leader of idiot fans who don't know the difference between MMA and UFC, but also has the balls the size of a baby rat to say I'm scared while Keyboard Warrior over here is more than likely to eat a fat man's ass than get in the octagon with his 125-pound champ. Lesson of the day, don't believe everything you read. Idiots run their mouths. P.S. Ariel Helwani, you suck at your job. I heard MMA is looking for a better journalist who is actually knowledgeable.
I mean, I think he may have said something that hit a little close to home. It's a real big overreaction. You fat man's ass. It's a good line. But I like her with the old... The people that don't know the difference between UFC and MMA. It's like, oh, yeah, lady. I'm sure you're a real hardcore OG original tape trader there. Come on. You're not me. And then, you know what? People like me, who really, you know, used to be snobby, now I'm just like, eh, just call it UFC. Like, if somebody's only, like, that person's only ever watched UFC, be like, yeah, most people have. Pride died a long time ago. Let it die already, okay? Like, there are people who are in the UFC right now who have never been alive during... I don't know about that. They were, like, in early grade school when Pride died. You know, just let it go, as the song goes. I think that's how it goes. Let it go? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now I'm looking forward to the next Nico Montano fight, and I had no idea I was until today.
That's true. This made her more of a champion than winning the belt did.
Last week, I think we mentioned Matt Serra was going into the UFC Hall of Fame. Another guy who's going in is Art Davey. He's the guy credited with coming up with the concept of the UFC and putting him in a cage with almost no rules and debuting the show back in 1993.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he should be in there. Good for him. I guess it's Bob Meyerowitz is always the one to always start other promotions. But they should all those guys should be in there, and Horian and all of them. I mean, they really should just, like, the whole, like, everybody who fought on early UFC card should be in the Hall of Fame. Those dudes are just like, God, I love that stuff. It's so far different than what we have right now for MMA, but so much better. It's just real people fighting. If you're coming on, come on.
Those early shows were something else. So good. But yeah, Art Davey's going into the UFC Hall of Fame. Congrats, Mr. Davey. What else is going on? We've got some upcoming fights coming up. Jose Aldo versus Jeremy Stephens at UFC on Fox 30 in Calgary.
That's a hell of a fight. That's a really, really good fight, actually.
We'll see what Aldo has left. I mean, old Jose Aldo would have destroyed Jeremy Stephens, but I don't know what this Aldo has left anymore.
Yeah, no, it's a great... I really like that fight a lot. It's weird. Well, I guess it makes sense. Stephens beat Korean Superboy, so he gets a bigger fight now. Yeah, he's having a good run.
Yeah, absolutely. Also on that show, UFC on Fox 30, we've got Joanna Chan Champion versus Tisha Torres.
Yeah. Kind of a weird duo of fights there. These two formerly dominant champions, and now they're both in fights that honestly could have almost been title fights at one time, but instead they're just like, oh, wow, those are really good fights, but you realize, oh, okay, these are the first fights of their career that are post-title.
Yeah.
You know, like they're not
relevant.
It's a little
sad. It feels sad to me.
This is what it's like, okay, you had these dominant runs. What do you get for reward? You get to go to Calgary and fight. Like, oh, yeah. I always wanted to fight in Calgary, said nobody.
Like, I would have liked to see either of them move up in weight, because it's like they've both always had issues with their weight cuts, and it's like, you know what, you're older, you know, why not move up and fight a mid-level guy with a name? Like, they could have, I know it would be a mismatch or whatever, but like Jose Aldo versus Diego or something, or Gilbert Melendez or something, you know what I mean? Where it would be a name, and it would give him a win, and he doesn't have to cut so much weight, and I don't know.
And let's face Jose needs fresh opponents. You know, yeah. He's pretty much beaten everybody at 145 pounds, except for one dude, pretty much. And, like, him at 150 would be good. Yeah, he wouldn't have to cut the weight. Same with Joanna.
Yeah.
In fact, outside of Rose, there's nobody left for her to really fight at 115, 125, new division. You can see what she could do at a higher weight class, new opponents, new style of opponents for her to fight also. But I guess she's afraid of Nico Montano.
She doesn't want to piss her off on Twitter. We've also got a replacement for Kamaru Usman on that UFC Chile card. He was originally supposed to fight Santiago Ponzinibbio. Now he's going to fight Damian Maia instead, which sounds like a worse option to me.
Yeah, but in some respects, you know, look, it's got more upside. It's still going to be a much bigger name. And it could be, I don't know, we don't know what Maya's really got anymore. Again, we saw Colby Covington beat Damian Maia and Kamaru Usman. I think he's around the Covington level, and, you know, that's the nature of the beast. You want to be a top fighter, eventually these guys got to go in there, and eventually they have to win. I think it's like this mindset that, like, the pro wrestling fan has, in us has, where it's kind of like, we think of, like, protecting people or whatever. It's like, oh, you know, could this guy be good for business? Like, what do you do to minimize it? It's like, man, it's fucking cage fighting. Sometimes you just got to go in there and win. Let's go do it, Kamaru, whatever you say, Nigerian prince.
I never respond to his emails. Michael Chiesa versus Anthony Pettis has been rebooked after the Dolly incident. It's going to go down on UFC 226 on July 7th in Vegas.
I feel like they should have just had these guys fight other people, and we could have all just admitted that nobody wanted to see this fight in the first place.
Junior Dos Santos is back after his...
That isn't Jose Aldo. That's who Jose Aldo should fight.
They were supposed to fight. Remember, Pettis was going to go down to 145 at one point and fight him?
Yeah, that would be a fight. I'd like to see that. That would be much better than Michael Chiesa. Ugh.
JDS is back after his non-USADA failure. He's going to take on Blagoy Ivanov at UFC Boise on July 14th.
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. Say that. Where?
UFC Boise.
Are you fucking with me? That's a real show? They're going to Boise?
UFC Boise, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Blagoy Ivanov or whatever from Russia... Junior Dos Santos from Brazil, growing up, thinking to themselves, I gotta train hard, I'm gonna be a cage fighter, maybe one day I'll be a big, rich, successful star, I'll go to America, I'll fight in America. Los Angeles, Chicago, New York City, big cities, even like Atlanta or Miami. Boise? Like, they don't have sports, they don't have real sports in Boise. They have a blue football field. That's it. What the hell are you going to Boise for? I mean, I would actually play. I wouldn't mind living in Boise. I bet it's a great place to live. But you go there because you don't want to have the UFC come to your town. You go to Boise because you want to see cattle ranching and stuff like that.
I'm trying to see what else is on this card. Hang on.
I mean, do they even have a local star from Boise? Or any of the other no states around it? There's not even states around Boise that produce, you know, big stars. Oh, yeah, legend from Montana or the Dakotas. or Eastern Washington. There's nothing
it's
there.
It's funny. They've got some obscure shows coming up. They've got the Utica card. They've got a show in Singapore, Boise, Idaho, Hamburg, Germany, Calgary, Lincoln, Nebraska.
What? What?
Yeah.
What do you want to like? I guess they got to figure, they got to... Lincoln, I can almost see, just because you'd be like doing like your one show for the Midwest is like a thank you for producing all the wrestlers.
Yeah, that's a fight night. UFC Fight Night 135.
And there are, again, and also there are wrestlers from Nebraska, so you can get some of that. Look, I mean, there aren't either. It's fucking Boise. I mean, holy crap. It may be, next to Wyoming, maybe the most anonymous state in America. Because Boise's not a state, but yeah.
The rest of Boise has, this event will mark the promotion's first visit to Idaho. Got Kat Zingano versus Marion Renault, Liz Carmouche versus Jennifer Maya, and Justin Scoggins versus Saeed Nurmagomedov.
I mean, if that doesn't scream main event card anywhere in America, man.
Zach Otto versus Sage Northcutt at welterweight.
At least I get Sage Northcutt.
Yeah, he'll fit in good in Idaho. It's perfect.
Except for in Idaho, they would all think he's way too progressive and crazy. They'd be like, look at that guy. He's a fucking liberal hippie kid with his spiked hair. And why is he smiling for? I don't trust him.
Idaho produced Napoleon Dynamite. I'm okay with Idaho.
Exactly. That's Idaho. Well,
it's a classic film. Yeah, so that's our upcoming fights. One fight that is out is Gunnar Nelson's next fight. He is out with a knee injury against Neil Magny. He wrote on Facebook, unfortunately, I have to withdraw from my fight against Magny on May 27th in Liverpool. Last weekend, I injured my knee. I will undergo an operation right away, and I'll be out for 8 to 10 weeks. I'm sorry to my family, my opponent, my teammates, the fans, and the UFC.
Wait, what day is that Liverpool show?
May 27th, which sounds like Memorial Day weekend to me.
That will be... They should cancel the whole show. And I'm not joking.
Why?
No one is going to that show. Because May 27th is the Champions League finale. That's Champions League final. Liverpool just qualified for today. Essentially the Super Bowl, if you will, of football, which is a weird sentence to say. The Super Bowl of European soccer, and Liverpool's in it. Like,
oh, wow.
They're not going. They're not going. I mean, they're only allowed 16,000 tickets, but nobody in that city is watching a fucking cage fight. Nobody.
Where?
I mean,
yeah. Where's the game going to be played?
Kiev in Ukraine.
Oh, shit. Okay.
But, I mean, they've won it 5 times. They've only been there like 8 times, I think now, like 100 years, you know, like nobody's going to watch this show.
Is it on at the same time?
No.
Is it like an afternoon game?
The game will probably start around 12 our time, so around 7 or 8 local time. But I don't know what time this UFC is going to be. I don't know if this is going to be one of those early in the morning ones for us or how they're doing it. Yeah, but nobody's going to... Unless they run this in the middle of the night, even that...
It's on Fox.
It's just... Yeah.
It's a Fox Sports one, card.
Yeah, it's just... Like, it doesn't matter when they run it. It doesn't matter who... They could have... Unless they had Conn McGregor in the main event, I don't know if there's any star, any show, any fight. You could have Jon Jones return, I don't think people would show up to see it.
Dude, on the prelims, they've got old man Dan Kelly.
Well, now I look a little foolish for saying that no one's going to watch.
Okay, for you, will you be watching UFC or will you watch the soccer game?
I'd watch the Liverpool 1,000 times over.
If it was a Conor fight, what would you watch?
Nope, I would watch Liverpool no matter what.
Wow. When did you become a soccer fan?
Years ago.
Like a kid, 15, 20, 25?
Oh,
what are you talking?
In my 20s.
Okay.
So, like, I always kind of liked it, watched it here and there, but really starting in my 20s, I started to become a fan, and so, yeah, probably about 7, 8, maybe even more now, years pretty hardcore following Liverpool. I don't think I've missed a game of theirs in 3 or 4 years, and that's like 50 matches a year I'm watching.
And why Liverpool? What?
It just happened. I don't know. And shit just grows on you.
No, but what, were there like certain players, or why not, I don't know, Manchester United or something?
Well, for starters, like, I knew somebody from Liverpool, but then I started reading about, I actually write about it every year on April 16th, 15th, maybe April 15th. It's in 1989, the Liverpool was involved in a horrific, mass death. 96 of their fans died getting trampled to death. Outside of the Hillsborough disaster, and just kind of reading
you
that,
like,
kind of connected me with them. It kind of it humanized it, if you will. And plus, they're just like, there's a
that
weird
sounds
thing
like something
like,
I'd be into.
Yeah, it's like I just really could identify with stomping on people. They'll go watch sports, just connect. Yeah.
That's stupid. God. So now, help me out here, because I'm very ignorant to many things, but they play in the Premier League, right?
Correct.
So, what is this bit? Is this something to do with the Premier League, or is this like a worldwide thing? What is this, that they're going to be in the championship game?
It's a European-wide tournament, if you will, basically.
So it's like okay, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, it's literally called the Champions League. When it first started out, it was just the champions of each country's league all would play. Like, in the tournament, what happens is the top four teams in the league every year qualify for next year's Champions League. And then they have like a group stage, and it's like the best two teams out of each group go on, and then they have like a round robin, like a home and away. Elimination tournament after that. So, you know, you play it concurrently with the other season, with your major season.
Is this the same thing that, like, that big, like, underdog team won last year? Leicester or whatever?
No, that was 2 years ago. That was Leicester City. Okay. They won the English Premier League.
Okay. So they would have been in the Champions thing the next year.
They were in the Champions League the next year. They did okay, actually. They did better than people thought they would.
So who's Liverpool playing?
Real Madrid.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, they're playing the big boys. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Do you like their chances?
Yes.
Okay. Is this a bigger Liverpool? Is this like a bigger Champions League game than normal?
It's the final.
No, I mean, like, as far as, like, people caring and anticipation, is this, like, a special one? If it's like the Patriots versus the Giants or something,
yes,
like that's,
yes,
a bigger Super,
yes,
Bowl
is,
than the Rams.
Yeah, I mean,
Bears.
Look this way: like, you've heard of Real Madrid; they are European royalty of royalty, the Yankees, basically, if you will, of Europe. Liverpool is, even though in the past couple of decade or so, like, they haven't been at quite those levels, they are still one of, like, I think only like two teams in European history have won more European championships than they have. Like, they are still an elite. Like, people will go, oh shit. Like, this isn't like, every once in a while you get some weird, like, Portuguese team gets in the final. Everybody's like, what the fuck? What the hell are they doing here? I don't want to watch Portuguese football. This sucks. But no, like, this is a big deal.
Okay. All right. What? Okay. Cool. I kind of get it now. All right. I'll watch UFC that night for you and let you know what happened.
Good.
Okay. Moving along, can you tell me what happened 18 years ago today? You'll know this one because you're infatuated with this person.
There's a lot of people I'm infatuated with.
This one, top 10 all-time infatuations.
Oh, fuck me, man. 18 years ago, 2000, April of 2000.
Who really got you off in May of 2000?
May of 2000. I don't even know what month it is. I mean, I was in high school still.
Legendary.
Sakuraba. Defeated Hoist Gracie.
Yes! In 90
oh
minutes.
My
yes.
Gosh, I'm good!
I gave you some hints.
You gave me one hint.
Okay, sorry. May 1st, 2000, 38,429 people in attendance at the Tokyo Dome. We had a Grand Prix open weight tournament, essentially, that was won by Mark Coleman when he defeated Igor Vovchanchin. There was also a super fight with Ken Shamrock and Alexander Otsuka, but I think the most memorable fight on this card was the Sakuraba Gracie fight that went 90 minutes because Gracie wanted like special rules, basically to allow unlimited rounds. After 90 minutes, Gracie couldn't continue because his legs were banged up. So Sakuraba moved on to the next round and lost to Vovchanchin in the semifinals.
Yeah, it was an incredible night. It's been written about. I've written about it. A lot of people have written about it. I think most people out there listening, especially this far into an MMA podcast, are more or less aware of the story. But it's always great to just remember a fight that, again, I would hope we will never see anything like that again. I don't think human beings should fight for 90 minutes. I don't think you could fight for 90 minutes in today's the way that everybody goes, but I mean, it really is one of the all-time most legendary athletic accomplishments in the history of sport. Like it really is. Like this should be celebrated the same way of like Frazier Ali and Frazier and, Ali and Foreman and all this. Like just these things, you go time stop for a moment. Yeah, hell of a night there.
I always liked the rematch with Gracie and Sakuraba too.
Oh, yeah. I was there for that.
Remember
I was there for that.
How I forget what his like testosterone ratio was or whatever,
but it was
insane.
It was like 1,000 to 1. It was some like off the charts, like Ronnie Coleman's looking at you going, are you out of your fucking mind? And you still look like a slobby piece of shit.
Best part is, Gracie has won his last two fights. One was the one against Sakuraba, one where he won by unanimous decision. And then back in 2016, he beat Ken Shamrock with knee and punches to the balls.
No, it's awesome that Hoist is. He's kind of like, in some ways, he's actually showing that the Gracie way does work. Eventually, he will beat you.
It might be your corpse, but he will get
the finish. He's basically winning because he lives healthier.
Which is
like he's
kind of
scary. He's like I think it was Frazier, whatever, talking about Ali, like I ended up winning in the end or whatever, like you know, kind of like that's the name of the game there.
In stuff news, WWE wrestler Kane, also known as Glenn Jacobs, has won the primary for the GOP nominee for Tennessee mayoral race. So he's one step closer to being a mayor in Tennessee, apparently, in Knox County.
He won by like 40 votes or something.
My article here says 17 votes. He beat a guy named Brad Anders by 17 votes and will battle Democrat Linda Haney in the general election on August 2nd. So we have 3 months to find out the finish of this fight. Jacobs' win is secured but won't be official for a few days due to the slim margin of victory and several provisional ballots to be counted. He said, thanks to everyone who helped win this historic victory, people who cast a ballot for me, my great team, my wonderful volunteers, looking forward to victory in the general election. Jacobs, who works as an insurance agent in addition to his wrestling career, is a libertarian. He ran his campaign on low taxes, improved infrastructure, and limited government.
Wait, he has a side job as a real estate agent?
Correct.
What the fuck?
Insurance.
Sorry, insurance agent?
Yes.
I mean, which is actually a very oddly libertarian thing to do, but although I hate insurance companies with a passion, I feel like he should have enough money that he doesn't need to sell insurance on the side. I think it's really weird.
He's taken some time off the last few years.
I think he made a lot of money, though.
He probably
seems like
did.
I have a feeling he's a pretty fiscally responsible dude. But
I think he has a shitload of land in Tennessee. I remember seeing his house was for sale a while ago. He's on 25 acres or some shit, I think.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. That makes a lot of sense. When I saw this article, it was kind of weird because they say he's running for mayor, but of the county.
Right.
Counties don't have mayors. Cities have mayors. Counties have commissioners.
Yeah. Tennessee
I don't trust
might be
Tennessee.
Different. You knew he was a libertarian, right?
Yeah. I guess it's awesome that he's going to do this. It's kind of surreal. Like, anytime anybody in W associated with pro wrestling does anything in the respectable world,
yes,
I'm surprised. Because, like, how do you not just show videos of him tombstoning Linda McMahon or crucifying somebody or setting someone on fire or being set on fire or having a baby with Lita or something? Like, just run those clips and be like, do you want this guy to be in control of the tax system? Be like, yeah, you got a point there.
The best angle he was ever part of was when he put the car battery on the ring steps and tied Shane McMahon to the post and put...
He shocked his balls.
Shocked his balls. Like, that is the clip to show.
Yeah, do you trust him in Law and Order? I don't think so. He should be out of control.
There's a picture of him in this USA Today article, and he's holding, like, his sign, you know, Glenn Jacobs, Knox County Mayor, and it literally has a flame on it.
Well, I'm glad he's leaning into it, I guess. I mean, you can't really run away from your past when you're a 6.5-foot-tall pro wrestler. You're going to stand out.
Do you remember that match he had where the flames were around the ring and his arm caught on fire and he ran away to the locker room with his arm on fire?
The Inferno match.
Yeah,
the Inferno match. The first one was him and against Undertaker at WrestleMania 14.
Yeah, and I remember every time they took a bump, like, the flames would go out and then come back on. That looked not safe.
Nah, but it was a really cool visual. Totally, like, one of those things where, like, after 30 seconds, you're like, oh, yeah, no, this is, this really limits this match. Nobody's going to do shit. Nobody's hitting those ropes. Nobody's going to get near them because that's fire. And you can't fake fire. You can't control fire. You can't tame fire. Fire is fire. And our animal instinct comes out. When you see fire, you just, like, instinctively back away, like, yeah, I know. I'm sure this is going to look really fake right now, but I'm not getting set on fire on accident.
It's funny, in a race this close, the fact that some wrestling fans probably went out and voted for him is what got him the win. Like, that's the craziest part, because usually it would hurt you. It wouldn't help you, but if there's 100 wrestling fans in that county, they probably all went and voted for Kane. Like, let's go vote for Kane. And
I
only won by 17 votes.
I suspect that stuff usually cancels each other out. And if I also get the... How many people really could vote in Tennessee?
Right,
in a Tennessee mayoral county election? Like, oh, we won by a margin of 17. They may be out of, like, 75.
Right,
like,
but that's what
I'm
saying.
A pretty good margin of win.
I
know. But
there's just enough wrestling fans to put them over the hump, maybe, is what I'm saying. But I'm sure most wrestling fans don't go out and vote in the local elections. You know what I mean? If you could have
an
edge. You know, and there's probably not enough anti-wrestling fans that are even going to know who he is and go out and vote against him. I hated when he shot Shane McMahon's balls. I'm going to vote for Brad Anders.
If I was Brad Anders, I would have just had jumper cables with me at all time. Just, like, carry them around. It's like my prop.
That is pretty funny. You should have. Or wore his mask everywhere just to troll him.
Oh, my gosh. That would
show up
be
at the debate wearing it.
And then, like, halfway through the debate, pull out the urn and be like, yes. What does this do to you, Kane? What does this do? Rise! Rise! That's
what
probably
was the angle with Taker where, like, Kane was burned in the house or something, and nobody saved him, and that's why he had the mask because his face was all burnt up?
Yeah. What it
was
was... It's
a bullshit storyline that Russo came up with, I remember.
Yeah, Paul Bearer is their dad. And I don't know if they're the same mom or not, but they live in the same house. Paul Bearer was their dad, and Kane was in the basement or something, and The Undertaker set the house on fire to Kane, and thought that he had killed Kane until Paul Bearer brought him back all these years later and teased him. And honest to goodness, when he first debuted, he looked so stupid in the red getup. Like, it just looked cheap and dumb, but he ripped that door off the handle and beat him up in the Hell in the Cell, and it was just kind of like, it's The Undertaker, and that's the only reason it worked. But
right.
It did. Like the Undertaker as a character, I think he's got to be the only pro wrestling character that's like a TV show. He had a successful spinoff. Like, Kane is the Frasier to The Undertaker's Cheers.
Is there another example of that?
And, just like Frasier, he's also right wing.
Hopefully he doesn't fall off a stage.
I'm sure he's fallen off that stage on the Titan there, or whatever it's called.
Titantron, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, did you see any of, speaking of wrestling on that topic, any of the greatest Royal Rumble ever?
I did.
You did. I did not watch 2 seconds of it. That's how out of it I am. This thing went down on Friday, April 27th on the WWE Network. It was called the Greatest Royal Rumble Ever. It had 50 participants, which was the most ever. But what set this show apart and made it special was that it was held in Saudi Arabia, and it was paid for by the Saudi General Sports Authority. WWE took some heat because no women were allowed to appear on the show, wrestle, or be in backstage vignettes. Basically, they took a big payoff and kind of, bastardized their product that they've been pushing with it, with the women and everything the last couple of years with Ronda and Charlotte Flair and all this stuff, the women's revolution and getting away from the divas. They weren't even allowed to be on the show because Saudi Arabia is a backward place.
They've had, I saw something, and I don't know if it was, this year or recently, but they've had, 48 beheadings in Saudi Arabia. Now, I know that, we've had the guillotine in the West or something like that, but I always assume, but I don't know how they do beheading. I assume they use a giant sword.
Right? Sure.
Like an Iron Sheik-looking sword, kind of curved, you'd assume, a Persian-looking sword would be, and, you just scream some Arabic shit and cut his head off, and, the whole crowd, in front of a crowd, and...
Yeah.
Oh, man, you're cutting heads off.
Yeah.
I guess there's an argument to be made that if you're going to live in a society that has a death penalty, you might as well use something that is visceral like that so you can appreciate that what you're doing is state-sponsored murder as opposed to this bullshit where you're like, oh, we just put him to sleep and this and that. It's like, no, you're killing somebody. You just do it. Actually kill the guy. I'd rather get my head chopped off than, a needle.
I don't know what the best way to
go. Something kind of badass about dying, your head getting cut off.
Well, you also hear fucked up
fucker.
You hear fucked up stories about lethal injections too. Like they don't go right. The person's writhing in pain, and I don't know what the
they have that with the beheadings also. You know,
If they chop your head clean off, I don't think you're suffering too much.
No, but that was the thing back in the days, like in Middle Ages or whatever.
They would hack it.
Yeah, that's why you had to pay the guy to ensure a clean cut, which is a really indignant way to go, paying for your own head to get cut off. It's kind of like the Chinese making the families pay for the bullets that they use to execute dissidents. Real classy people there. The point being that Saudi Arabia is a backward shithole of a country, and this thing, it was just a house show, I guess. I was astonished, though, at the level of just like transparent propaganda, there's this point where I'm like, it felt like some cheesy VHS tape that you'd put like in the lobby of like a hotel or something like that in the 80s, and you'd be like, oh yeah, and just kind of move on, like some like RoboCop had this, and like, we're so loving and this and that, and women do this, and it's just like, it's a complete lie, and everyone knows it's a lie. Even they know it's a lie. I don't even know why they're doing it, but they are doing it, and everybody's like very clear of, hey, they got a lot of money, and that's why we're doing this. But the crowd all seemed to know what was going on, which I don't know what is up with that country. How the fuck are they allowed to watch pro wrestling? Like, it's a country where women couldn't drive a car, yet you can watch pro wrestling? Like, pro wrestling has to be one of the most scandalous, offensive to Allah type of programs you could have. Just violence and sex and women and this and that. I'm like, were these people in the Attitude Era? What were they thinking? I mean, crimey, they had to issue a public apology because there was a commercial for the Divas Wrestling. And like, ah, yeah. Like, well, what about the rest of it? Like, every other character on the roster is like some sort of like homosexual undertones. Like, AJ Styles kind of gay looking. Finn Balor's gay. I think Seth Rollins' gimmick is that he's gay. I think the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. thing was that they were all gay. Like, everybody in the company is gay. What are they watching it for? Or maybe that's why they are.
Yeah, it was a weird one because Balor didn't have his rainbow shit on, which he had done previously.
What a surprise there, huh? Yeah. Suddenly that, I'm going to stand up for gay rights. I'm not going to go nuts here, people. I mean, come on. I'm out of my fucking mind here. They will literally kill me. I mean, do you see what they're going to do to the Daivari character?
Well, they also did an angle with, I think it was Daivari and some Saudi Arabian fighters that apparently Saudi Arabia isn't a big fan of people coming out with the Iranian flag. Apparently there's some heat between those two nations, I guess, and that raised some eyebrows too, like, what were they thinking? But the Saudi guys got the upper hand, and the crowd seemed to be okay with it, but initially, there was fear that that would not go well.
Yeah, well, afterwards, Daivari had to come out and issue a statement on Twitter, which was essentially, everybody, it's fake, and I'm playing a role. I love you, Saudi Arabia, and I'm proud of my Persian heritage. I think they said Persian, not Iranian. Like, it was kind of one of those uncomfortable, please don't put a fatwa on my head moments. And I guess that's what it was like to be a wrestler in the South in the 70s, especially if you're black or something.
In the main event, in the greatest Royal Rumble ever, Braun Strowman broke the record by eliminating 13 men and won the Rumble, which also featured Shane McMahon, the Great Khali, Bobby Lashley, Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio Jr.
What's with this Bobby Lashley shit? I've seen on Raw or whatever. I'm like, who gives a shit about Bobby Lashley? Except he's got the
like
Trump connection. He's got the Trump connection.
True.
That's it. He's got this. He won one for Trump. Son of a bitch. I know Vince likes his pecs and all, but come on. Bobby Lashley's so boring. He is like, black people, pretty much as a rule, just inherently have more charisma than white people. They're just more likable, they're cooler than us, they just are. Bobby Lashley is a way bigger dork than either one of us. Even with all those muscles and everything, he's still like, if you were to like put you and I in a room with him and like ask people like, which one of them you think likes cage fighting and which one of you thinks likes to play chess, they would all pick him for chess. Like, they just would. He looks like that kind of dorky guy.
Okay. All right. Daniel Bryan set the record for longest time in a Royal Rumble. He was in for an hour and 16 minutes. It's good to see them protecting Daniel Bryan since all of his head trauma. Have him wrestle for an hour and 16 minutes. sounds like a good idea.
I'm beginning to think that Daniel Bryan may not have the best judgment when it comes to his health.
He may not. Probably the highlight of the show, from what I could tell, was Titus O'Neil running to the ring and tripping and skidding under the apron. That was the only thing
bastard.
I saw. And I'm on Twitter. I'm watching some stuff. I follow some wrestling stuff, and it's just like the only thing I saw from the entire show. I didn't see John Cena versus Triple H. I didn't see like Braun Strowman with his hand raised after he won the Battle Royal. I only saw Titus O'Neil tripping, and it was over and over. It was everywhere. It went pretty viral. I think they're doing an angle based off of it on Raw now, but I didn't see Styles and Nakamura. I didn't see Undertaker and Rusev. Lesnar and Reigns had a cage match. Didn't hear anything about any of that shit. It was all...
I watched it because I was at work and I was bored, so I had it on like in the background, and Roman Reigns almost died. Like, he's like, legit. Like, Brock was like up on the top rope or like Roman Reigns speared Brock through the cage, and like the idea was like Brock landed first, but he actually hit the cage, not the floor, and blah blah blah. But like Reigns just like went straight down on top of his head. He spiked himself on this thing. I was like, audibly went like, oh, but like it was like, oh, that's a scary one. Otherwise, yeah, this show sucked. It was just kind of boring and bland. Although it's kind of weird to see the crowd, because like I've never seen a crowd with luxury chairs, like. Like reclining leather chairs in the front row. Those Saudis, man. Say what you will about their practices of treating, you know, people like, well, lower than animals, but they know how to really live it up. I guess like modesty and charity and like and all that is not a Muslim concept or something.
Yeah, when you talk about, you know, like income inequality and. You know, minimum wage and shit like that, and people complain about how it is in the United States. It's like, look at the fucking Middle East, man. They really have it backwards. I mean, granted, there's probably some stuff we could do, and I don't know if Jeff Bezos needs to be worth whatever, $90 billion, whatever he is right now.
Wait, hold on. You just did it. I saw somebody make a statement kind of like what you just said.
Yeah,
and it was, and they basically said, "Look what happened." I think they said $90 billion ago. I tried to come up with a number that was so big it was absurd that you would know I was joking. It was so large, and it's still not right because it's like $100+ billion.
I saw something like he made like $18 billion in the last day because Amazon stock went up or whatever. But obviously there's something to it, like the robber barons and all that shit from the 1800s or whatever, but it's nothing compared to
the Saudis are totally different.
Qatar, and all those countries with the oil. It's like, those sheiks are worth so much fucking money, and it's like, the people are fucked, like, real bad.
And theirs is particularly gross, because, like, Jeffrey Bezos very clearly provides a service that people like. Now, maybe Amazon's making too much money, but like he invented Amazon. We've never had this. He's transformed the way the world is. Like, these Saudi motherfuckers are just like, oh yeah, look at that. We're sitting on oil. They don't do anything. They never had to think. They were just there. And
right.
Westerners have to come in. We have to pump the oil, and then we use the oil for things. Like, we invent all the stuff that uses oils. This is just a bunch of dirt, like mud people, if you will. Sand people that just 150 years ago were living in the Stone Ages, and most of the people still are. Just a couple of them got a lot of money, and again, unlike our rich people, like, they really spend. I mean, they really, like, they go over the top with the way they blow money, because it's just unlimited. Like, they have so much money. Like, in Saudi Arabia, none of the men in Saudi Arabia work. Like, even the citizens. Like, they have income inequality, but like every citizen like in Saudi Arabia, which is semi limited in citizenship, but they're all getting almost like, I think, like six figures a year just from their oil proceeds or whatever. It's disgusting what these people have, and I hope they enjoy it, because in about 50 years or so, when nobody needs oil anymore, no one's going to give a shit anymore.
Well, I mean,
all of a sudden we're just going to look. Also, all of a sudden we're just going to tell Israel, "Yeah, no, we're done. You have at it. Just do whatever you want to them. We're no longer. We don't care if it's unstable. You can blow the shit out of them. We just don't care anymore."
What do you? I mean, that's a good point, because the question is, what's going to happen when, like, you know, solar and other forms of energy, whatever it might be, come along, hydrogen, whatever. Or they just run out of fucking oil. At some point, how much can you drill? Think about all the barrels of oil that come out of there. It's like, eventually it's going to run out, right?
That's what I keep thinking. But then, like, every year they find, like, a new reserve somewhere in the planet that they think has more oil than they ever knew. It's just like, I don't know. Maybe there's, like, a lot of oil in the Earth. Maybe there must be. There must be just, like, way more oil than we realize. And I always thought it was kind of like proof, like, not proof, but evidence there of the divine, if you will. Because if you were ever going to create a place to have all the oil, you'd put it in the middle of a desert. Like, there's just nothing to spoil. You don't have to worry about hurting any plants. There's no animals. There's just nothing. I mean, they live in basically the world's butthole. Just this arid shit place that Ariel Helwani kisses to get out of fighting in a cage.
Well, oil is weird, too, because there's so many places where it seems like there isn't any. Like, you don't drill for oil in New England, but it's like there's some in Texas and Venezuela and the Middle East, and I feel like maybe Africa. I don't know. It's
probably
totally
probably
random.
Is some, that's true. It seems to be well, Venezuela, boy, that country's a shithole too.
But I mean,
trees,
I guess
though.
Canada maybe isn't there pipelines from Canada or some shit?
Canada has more. We get more of our oil from Canada than we do from the Middle East.
Yeah.
I mean, in America itself, America produces more oil now than we import. Like, our production values are gotten, because we're so efficient with it. But yeah, no, they're sitting on a very finite resource. And it's finite because of what it is. And it's just finite due to, again, they're not creating anything. All they are doing, they're essentially a tax. All they are is a tax on the world. And it's basically like, if you want to be efficient in business, you need to give Saudi Arabia money. It's just a weird thing, because they are just helping you build stuff faster and move cars faster, do things more efficiently, and people are going to always look for a way to be even more efficient than what they offer, and they're going to do it, and again, we're just going to kick them off and be like, all right, bye, and I think they know it. Well, I know some of them know it. That's why they're trying to build up the UAE and some of that stuff, but some of those backwards motherfuckers, like in Pakistan and Iran and all them, like, those real nut job true believers. I don't think the Saudi Arabia guys, I don't really know if a lot of them are true believers. I think that they have a lot of people there who are very pragmatic, who publicly do the true believer thing, and they let some of the mullahs run wild and cut off a head here and there just for whatever. But I think the guys who are really, like, in charge, they're not stupid.
Yeah.
They see what's coming.
Well, they paid WWE $25 million, though. That's not the brightest move. It's weird, too, because I wonder, like, you got to think at this point, most of these oil companies have explored most of the world, but it's like, anybody gone in the middle of, like, Australian outback and seen if there's oil out there? Like, I wonder if it's just going to turn up. But how would they even...
I don't know how they... Well, they've got their little devices and...
If
there's one piece of technology I feel very confident that we are developing as well as possible, it's the oil-finding machine.
Yeah, I've just never really put a lot of thought into it. It's like, I wonder how you search a whole continent to see if it has oil, you know?
I think
there's nothing in the middle of Australia.
They might just go around digging randomly. I mean, that's how they used to do it.
Yeah.
You would just walk around every once in a while and just dig a hole and hope.
That's what I'm saying. There's a lot. You hear about the bubbling crude, like the Beverly Hillbillies that just started coming up out of the ground, and now they're millionaires, you know? It's interesting. It is interesting. Speaking of interesting, Whole Foods is in hot water over a controversial restaurant name. Have you heard about this?
What did Jeffrey Bezos do?
This is more in my wheelhouse. The owners of a California-based restaurant chain claimed their eatery was a tongue-in-cheek name, and Whole Foods decided to partner with them. But now a Pan-Asian cafe is causing quite the controversy on social media, and many people are not happy. On Wednesday, Whole Foods Market announced on Twitter that its Long Beach location opened a new restaurant named Yellow Fever, which serves customized rice bowls with a variety
Seriously?
Of Asian flavors. Yes.
How fucking stupid are people? Like, I'm not offended by this, obviously, but just how dumb are you? How many layers of people does that name have to go by and nobody catches it? And nobody goes, guys, I don't know. I don't. It's not like it's worth the risk. Like, it's one thing if like, you're doing, like, you're, you know, you tell an offensive joke and it bombs. Like, oh, yeah, Yellow Fever. Okay. In what way would you ever want to eat at any restaurant associated with either wanting to have sex with Asian women or dying of the Asian plague? I don't want Cambodian AIDS as my restaurant.
Well, it's not the first of its kind. The chain has two other locations in Torrance and Venice, California. This restaurant seemed to have opened the backlash floodgates due to its new association with the national grocer. Yellow Fever not only refers to an often fatal viral disease contracted by infected mosquitoes, but is also a racially charged term that signifies a non-Asian person being attracted to someone of Asian descent, usually with the connotation of fetishism.
Yeah, and that's good stuff. Yeah, it's a real weird one. Like, those are the only I could see if like you're an Asian person. You know what it would be, it'd be like? It's like when I was in high school and I did backyard wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And
the good
I
old
had
days.
And one of the characters I came up with was called White Lightning. Okay. And I didn't think like I later found out that, like White Lightning like used to be used in the South as like a racist thing. It was some sort of white power thing or something like that. But, like, I had no idea because I was, like, 15 years old, right? But you would assume that, like, or if I named the kid, like you know, Jewish Lightning or something. Like, you know, like, if I had done, like, you know, there's just things like if you're young and stupid, you don't know they're offensive. Like, I could see that somebody's, like, not understanding, like, wait, what is yellow fever? Is it heard, like, I got yellow, like, you know, whatever. Not a company owned by Amazon or anybody else. It's just people are stupid. Just why would you do this?
Essentially, like Whole Foods was renting out this space to this restaurant, which had two other locations. Yellow Fever co-owner Kelly Kim, who is originally from South Korea, told the paper that she and her partner knew the name would be a little shocking, but that's what they liked about it. When we finally came up with the concept, all the names we thought of just plain sucked. Buzzwords like traditional, bamboo, lotus, and golden weren't memorable, she explained. One night we just said, Yellow Fever, and it worked. It's tongue-in-cheek, kind of shocking, and it's not exclusive. You can fit all Asian cultures under one roof with a name like this. We just decided to go for it.
That's why it's racist. That's why it's racist, because you could put all the cultures with it. Although, I will say that the one thing I've noticed is I feel pretty comfortable, like I'm on pretty solid, comfortable ground here, is that keep in mind, I've been to Asia. The only Asian people that get offended by any of this are Asian Americans. Like, people from Asia, they never think that white people, that Americans are racist. They never think that. They don't think that way. Like, when that girl wearing that Asian dress, the guy's like, don't appropriate my culture. The Chinese don't think that at all. It doesn't even dawn on them that it would be racist. Because they do the same thing to our culture. And, like, they just see it as totally just like, oh, yeah, yellow fever. Like, I could totally see someone over there being like, why would you be upset by that? Like, Asian people also just tend not to get offended. Like, they don't get upset about things like that. They get upset about dumb things like their honor from their grandfather or something like that, and disrespecting the Bushido code. But not something like racism. Like, all Asians are kind of racist, too.
Well, they're also smarter than everyone else, too.
They are. They are. That's my running joke. That's my running joke on that book, The Bell Curve, where everybody gets upset about it because it shows that, like, statistically, on IQ tests, like, black people test lower than white people for whatever reason. We don't know what it is. And it's not environmental. It's just a genetic thing. But Asian people test higher than white people. So my joke is always, yeah, the bell curve says that white people are smarter than black people, but you got to be Asian to understand why.
That's a good one. In other food-related news, the first reported death from E. coli-contaminated romaine lettuce has occurred. The nationwide food poisoning outbreak from E. coli-contaminated romaine lettuce has claimed its first fatality, an unidentified person in California, and the infections have sickened a total of 121 people in 25 states. That is an increase of 23 people in three states, including Kentucky, Massachusetts, and Utah, since the most recent CDC update on Friday.
How do they know that it's from the E. coli and not just the fact that lettuce sucks?
This doesn't happen that often. I think the E. coli was sourced back to Yuma, Arizona, and a bunch of people have gotten sick, and now we have our first death due to poop in our romaine lettuce.
I mean, I guess it's not really funny if somebody dies. On the other hand, this is one of those stories that if you had not told me about this, I could go decades without hearing news about dangerous lettuce. Like, there could be a ban on lettuce telling people warnings, don't eat the lettuce, don't eat the lettuce, and I would have no clue. I wouldn't see those signs. I'm not even near the lettuce aisle or whatever, wherever the fuck they keep lettuce in the grocery store. I don't even know where they keep lettuce. I'm not going near that. This story does not affect me at all. This is like worrying about mad cow disease and being a vegetarian.
You're that anti-salad, huh?
I just don't eat salad. I don't really hate, like, I eat broccoli every day, but lettuce in particular just seems so, it's just so blah. Like, ugh, I'm just chewing, bleh, it's like crispy water. Ugh, fuck it.
Okay. Okay. Like, you're talking like iceberg lettuce, romaine, because it's like spinach.
I don't really know any of them. I don't really know the differences. They're all just eating a plant, just a raw fucking plant. Mm. That's all it is. It's just grabbing leaves. It's like eating a leaf to me.
Okay.
They're just leaves that are socially acceptable to eat.
Interesting. All right. It's going to be very interesting if we ever go out to eat together. That should be a video in and of itself, I think. In other food news, I got one more. 100 Californians have contracted norovirus from eating raw Canadian oysters. I have a feeling this won't be an issue for you either. California health officials say...
I've had mussels.
Those are not oysters. California health officials say about... They are not. Say about 100 people statewide have contracted norovirus in the last week after eating raw oysters from British Columbia, Canada. The State Department of Public Health issued a warning Wednesday about the possible risk of illness from consuming oysters harvested in South and Central Bain Sound. Canada has reported more than 170 cases of gastrointestinal illness linked to consumption of raw oysters. Officials say the number of new illnesses is declining, but the investigation is ongoing. Norovirus is contagious and causes inflammation of the stomach and intestines. Symptoms include my three favorite symptoms, vomiting, diarrhea, and fever.
Ooh, always a good trio. Yeah, got to throw in some itching, and then you're complete with the misery scale.
Yeah, a rash is good, too. Yeah.
Are pearls baby oysters?
Oh, fuck. No. No.
Pearl? Why do they have pearls?
Most don't. That is like an old...
Oh, that's right. It's like sand that gets in there or something.
Yeah. But, I mean... Yeah, whatever. I've opened probably over 1,000 oysters myself and have seen thousands of oysters opened in my life. There's never been a pearl in any one of them. It's like an old wives' tale.
Like, do oysters have sex with each other? They
that
must.
That I don't know.
They're
usually,
alive.
Like around here, there's a lot of like oyster farms, and they buy they call them seeds, and basically they're tiny oysters, and they put them in a real small like kind of like a plastic mesh cage, and the tide will come in and out, and they'll be under the water, they'll be out of the water, and they grow, and then you'd move them to a bigger cage and a bigger cage and a bigger cage until they're big enough to you know, sell to restaurants or supermarkets or whatever.
They're like oysters are really inefficient food. You know, you don't get there's not very much meat in there. They're a pain in the ass. They're big. They're clumped. Like, I can just, like, nature's like telling you, it's not worth it. You're better off just grabbing, like.
You know what, like, though? They're really not that much work because you just put them in the ocean and you leave them there. You know what I mean? There are, like, wild oysters that just grow on their own out in the ocean, but you
farm
them.
Oh, I know, but I'm talking, like the act of, like, picking it up and opening it and eating it. Like, I feel like you have to crack open a lot of them to get a meal.
Right, but it's a lot easier than raising livestock. You just throw it in the ocean and it grows on its own. You don't have to do shit.
Yeah, but you can
you're not buying corn and you're trying to. You can't ride an oyster, that's true. An oyster forms pearls by secreting a mineral substance called nacre and uses it to quarantine an irritant. I don't know what that means.
So basically, a pearl is an oyster's white blood cells that have coagulated and hardened. Huh.
Yeah. I've never seen a pearl in an oyster. I've never heard of anyone finding one in an oyster. But I guess most people get cultured pearls, where a pearl farmer embeds a grain of sand into the mollusk. So, we make that happen to get pearls, basically.
Whoop-de-doo, people. Just horse shit for women.
You fucking asked. I don't think women care about pearls anymore, do they?
No, they really don't. Like, they're just...
Yeah, it's diamonds,
my mom,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they still care about diamonds. Like my mom went to, like, get rid of some of her pearls, like, try to sell them. And these were, like, really expensive, nice, like, ocean pearls or some whatever horse shit. And the guy's like, yeah, back in the 80s, this would have been worth, like, $1,200. Today, it's worth, like, $50. Just, like, nobody cares. It's just... This generation of women just don't wear pearls at all.
Yeah, it's a supply and demand thing. We probably got better at making them, and not as many people want them.
Yeah, I guess. It's stupid women stuff. It's women. They just have these dumb things. Like, they just got to spend a lot of money on fucking rocks, and that's it. It's just always rocks or pearls, just another rock. Like, dudes don't have that. Like, I spend a lot of money on TV, and I use it. It's a television. And just sit on my hand, like, screaming, rape me, rape me.
What?
I feel like a big engagement ring is, like, attracting attention from ne'er-do-wells.
Huh. Interesting.
It's like the way that you express your love for a woman is to be like, baby, I love you so much, I'm going to give everyone that sees you in the street a reason to mug you.
I get it, I guess. A Massachusetts police department says a fingerprint left in a hunk of Play-Doh led them to a shoplifting suspect. Lester police
responded to... four-year-old Timmy did it.
Lester police responded to Walmart on December 11th after an employee found several electronic anti-theft devices that had been covered in the malleable clay-like toy in an apparent attempt to neutralize them. The attempt to disable the spider wrap devices failed and the suspect had fled. He did, however, leave a fingerprint impression on the Play-Doh. Police announced Monday the Connecticut Forensic Lab helped find a match for the print. Police charged 55-year-old Dennis Jackson with unlawful removal of an anti-theft device. Police say he has a long criminal record and faces arrest warrants in at least two other states.
Bam. I mean, really? This guy's got other warrants out for his arrest? Jeez. I mean, who'd have thunk it?
I don't even get what he was trying to do. He basically was wrapping the stuff up in Play-Doh, and he thought it wouldn't set trigger the alarm or something. Like, it must have had some security thing on it. He tried to cover it in Play-Doh with the idea it would not go off. Like, what the fuck?
Criminal logic, man. Criminal logic.
That's pretty bad. And lastly, we have the story of a Florida man arrested for practicing karate by kicking swans in the head.
Florida's the best state.
A Florida man
practicing. Like, hey, what's the most efficient way to practice my karate moves? Kick a bird, kick a swan.
A Florida man interested in karate is alleged to have found an elusive and illegal target for his kicks, bird faces. Last week, the Orlando Sentinel reported that Rocco Joseph Mantella was arrested for practicing karate by kicking swans in the head at a park in downtown Orlando. And further details of his arrest, which were first published by Bloody Elbow, are wild as shit. According to an Orange County, Florida arrest affidavit, Mantella was spotted by a few witnesses around 9:30 a.m. on Thursday, April 26th, kicking a bunch of animals. Someone saw him kick one swan in the head and another in the butt while practicing karate. His kicks were enough to knock one swan down, and a witness said he was kicking as hard as possible. Mantella also apparently targeted a small duck enjoying a morning nap. When one witness saw what he was doing, he apparently began to laugh at her. Mantella was charged with one count of cruelty to animals, which carries a maximum sentence of 6 months in Florida.
I gotta say, actually, I wouldn't kick a swan. Like, that's a mean animal. That's a big bird, too. Like, I don't want to fuck with no bird. I'm like kicking a goose. Hey, if I see a goose, I'm staying away from those honkers.
Swans are fucking mean, nasty animals. Yeah, we get them.
So maybe it is good practice for maybe it is good karate practice. You know, if you kick a swan and not get bit back, you gotta be pretty fast and elusive, accurate with your kick.
Have you ever been near like a swan? That they hiss at you, like they're nasty.
They're creepy. Yeah, I don't. There used to be a pond near my old house, and every once in a while, I think it was a swan. Every once in a while, would show up, and a crane also. That was a big motherfucker.
Mantella has some experience fighting humans as he wrestled for Indiana University and fought in an amateur MMA bout once, and almost made his pro MMA debut in 2012.
Maybe he could be on Dana White's fight series.
He could fight Greg Hardy.
I mean, seriously, him, Greg Hardy, Nick Newell. You could have the former pro football player, the one-armed man, the guy that kicks swans. Just make this thing a total shit show promotion.
I'm trying to read some.
Thanks,
more.
Florida. Thanks, Florida.
This
really,
isn't Mantella's
truly the. This is his first conviction?
This isn't Mantella's first run-in with police. Earlier this month, he was arrested for trespassing at Walt Disney World. In March, he was charged with
attempted
robbery.
Where he beat the shit out of a gigantic mouse.
In March, he was charged with attempted robbery and disorderly conduct after allegedly taking food from people's trays at McDonald's before threatening to rob a couple in a nearby parking lot.
He must be white, because if he was black, there'd be a national outrage about this, like in Starbucks. Nah, really.
This guy's pretty good. You should see his mugshot. He
was he inebriated during this?
He's got what I like to refer to as crazy eyes.
See, I would have get. Oh, this could be a meth one. This could be meth. It's got an alcohol feel to it, though.
Have you seen
not
this
marijuana
picture?
Though? No, I have not.
All right, I'm gonna send it.
But
to
his
you.
Actions. His actions feel. Yeah, alcohol or meth. He's not laid
this
back.
This looks. It does not appear to be a depressant that this individual was on, based on his crazy eyes. Oh,
hey, on the other
while
hand, that could just be the way you the people look in Florida.
It could be.
They all got crazy eyes.
This looks unnatural. While I'm sending that to you so you can look at it, I know you had some feelings about the Boy Scouts.
Oh. I mean, I don't like the idea. I wasn't a Boy Scout, so it doesn't really matter what I think.
But there's a lot of things you've never done that you like to share your opinion on.
That's true. I think that there's something just... Oh, this guy's awesome. Oh, he's got gay porn star look on him.
Huh, I'm not that familiar. You would be more apt to know that look than me.
But, I think there really should be something for boys, something for girls. It sounds to me like I know they try to integrate it, and people hear, like, there's Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, and they're completely separate organizations. Like, it seems like they should be, you know, the Scouts have the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts. Like, they're all, no, but it turns out like the Girl Scouts completely run by different people and all this stuff. And I guess, like, the Girl Scouts suck. Like, they don't do anything fun. The Boy Scouts do fun things. There's a shock. Like, dudes are more fun to hang out with than chicks. Like, everybody knows this. Like, nobody wants to do girly things. They're just boring. And so, like, they changed the name to the Scouts, and they're trying to bring the girls in. They're going to still have, like, boys-only trips, though, and girls-only trips, I guess. And, I mean, I really think it's important that you have kind of, like, unisex activities. Because boys should be boys sometimes. It's just, especially for boys. I don't know what girls need. I have no idea. I know boys need to just sometimes run around and wrestle with each other and call each other, like, a jerk. I guess we can't say, like, any of the normal ones. I was like, you can't call him a homo or anything like that anymore. Call him a butthole or whatever. Like, that's just how guys are. And women are always like, oh, it's just disgusting. This is toxic masculinity. It's like, no, it's just how dudes are. And, like, I think they should be appreciative of the fact that we all recognize, like, no, guys, we are all monsters. We should just keep this away from the ladies. So we'll just get together with each other, and like the one older dude takes all the little boys in the woods. He's like, "All right, guys, here's how that works. We're all pigs. You can only be a pig when you're with each other. Otherwise, you got to, you got to behave in front of the girls. But if the girls are there, the guys can't act out. And if guys can't act out, eventually they shoot up their school."
When I've read a couple articles on this. I think we might have talked about it initially when they were first started coming up with this idea. But to me, it more looked like the Boy Scouts had declining membership. Like, it's just dropping every year, like 5% every year or whatever it might be. And they're looking to get membership up and make some more money. To me, it was just a business decision. I mean, I'm sure there's some political correctness bullshit with it, too. But if their membership was up and they were making more money, I don't think they make this move.
No. And it's kind of weird. This is also one of those things where I think it's important that if, like, even if you weren't a scout, but, like, if you don't really know anybody who's a scout or you're around that stuff, I think anybody like that, which kind of includes, I knew some people were scouts, but not really. Like, that's a different world. Like, for some people, like, I'm guessing for you and me, you and I, the Boy Scouts weren't really, like, the end-all, be-all, like, oh, should they? It was kind of maybe you're, like, a dork or whatever. But, like, there really are people who take this shit seriously. Like, they're outdoorsmen, and they do these things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Like, I defer to them. Maybe some of them thinking, ah, my girl can do all the things boys can do, and this and that, and they want to raise a tomboy or whatever. Whatever, I guess, raise your own kids, people. Stop asking someone else to do it for you. Get involved with your kids' lives.
That's some good advice from someone who has no kids. Anything else we should talk about this week?
Nope.
Nothing?
Nothing.
All right, on that note, I apologize to everyone who's listening to this, but we will be back next week on halfguarded.com. This is MMA and stuff. You can hear us on iTunes, Google Play. Like, subscribe, share, do all that stuff for us. Thanks for listening. Bye.
I'm finished.